Blog Talk Radio.
You are now rocking to the beats with the East Coast music mogul, DJ Mike Q, Queen Beat Productions, DJMikeQ.com.
Thank you.
IQ.
I ain't a bitch. Male figure versus female figure. Two trophies. One cash prize of $250. Butch Queen face. One trophy, one cash prize of $250. Open to all, foot and eye. Male figure versus female figure. Two trophies. One cash prize of $250. Open to all, team three. One trophy, one cash award of $300. And 13 other $100 categories. The 4th Annual Carolina Awards Ball. Saturday, May 5th, 2012, Charlotte, North Carolina. See you there.
Gigi Mama Mom Chanel presents Two Events in One Night. Something for everyone. Kansas City's first stud and femme exotic review show. Special guests, Carter from Los Angeles and Treasure from Houston, Texas. Right after, the April Fool's Ball, grand prize, house with the most trophies, $1,000. Mini grand, open to all performance with a prop, $200, as well as 15 other categories with trophies and prizes. That's Saturday, March 31st in Kansas City. Doors open at 10 p.m., LSS at midnight. April Fool's, don't be late or you'll gag. All cash categories are first. Location, Truman Hall, WH28 Truman Road, Kansas City. $15 all night, VIP table 35, comes with a bottle and food. 18 to enter, 21 to drink. That's the Sudden Some Exotic Review Show and the April Fool's Ball. For more info, contact Gigi, Model Mom Chanel Carrington on Facebook. That's Gigi, Model Mom Chanel Carrington on Facebook. April Fool's. Overseer TJ Mizrahi presents Catch Me If You Can. Saturday, April 7th in Detroit, Michigan. Grand prize, open to all performance, $1,000. Mini grand, open to all runway, $300. Foot Queen Sex Siren, $100. Open to all realness, $300. And a special mini grand sponsored by Mother Gigi Dior.
Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous Ball. Sunday, March 24th, 2012, 3 p.m. to 10 p.m. at the Fort Cheyenne Casino and Event Center, 2428 East Cheyenne Avenue, North Las Vegas, Nevada. Hosted by the legendary mother, Divine Chanel. Commentated by the icon, Jack Mizrahi. We are proud to say we offer the biggest cash prizes on the West Coast. No tea, no shade, no competition. Over $6,000, 3 years and counting. Categories include mini grand prize, $500, open to all runway, $500, open to all realness, $500, open to all best dress, $1,000, open to all face, car, you understand it, and 8 other $100 categories. Grand prize number one, $1,500 open to all Vogue. Grand prize number two, $1,500 open to all Sex Virus. Get ready. B2T, Tempted to Touch presents Lifestyles of the Rich and Famous Ball.
Enough of this horseshoe. I am not afraid. I was born with. Good evening, everyone, and thank you for tuning in to State of Emergency Show, Episode 5, where tonight we will be talking about balls. Everything that happens at balls, all the issues with events, from issues that happen on the panel, commentators, too many balls, rent balls, the violence, the bullying, anything and everything that is causing the ballroom scene to deteriorate. Tonight we will have a panel of guests that will be giving feedback, answering questions, suggestions, and giving their opinions on what actually is taking place now within the ballroom scene as far as the event goes. We have, and I want to say thank you to everyone that is tuning in tonight. Thank you to everyone in the chat room. Hello, chat room. And to all my guests that are on the airwaves. I also want to say thank you to the stars and the statements and the up-and-coming legends that are a part of the show tonight. I really appreciate it. I think as the show goes on, we get more and more of you guys, and I like the flavor of being different each and every week with you guys tuning in. So I really appreciate it. So if you guys are on the phone line and you have any questions or comments in reference to tonight's topic, please press 1. If you are a guest on the line, and I didn't hit you up on Facebook already, and you're supposed to be tuning in to us with us and sitting on the panel with us, please press 1 as well. I do see you guys there, and I'm going to introduce you guys shortly and bring you aboard, and we will be talking about balls tonight. I do want to make an announcement. Well, I did get a message about an hour ago or so that we have lost another individual within our ballroom scene, and that is from the House of Pendarvis, Ms. Sade Pendarvis. It looks like, she has passed on this evening, so may she rest in peace. I do remember Sade from my era of walking balls because she was one of the girls that I looked up to when it came time to creating those costumes and effects. She was very known for her feathers and beads and gowns and sequins and headpieces and things of that sort. So I really am going to miss her. We need to, start taking a grasp within our generation, within our community, because, you can be here today and be gone tomorrow. And, if you guys may want to also send a message out to her and her house or, something like that, feel free to call in as well. But before we go any further, I am going to bring on some of our guests. The first person is the pioneer icon, R.R. Chanel. How are you?
I'm good, Jasmine. How's it going tonight?
It's going good. Did you hear the news about Sade?
Yeah, I did get that earlier, and I was kind of like saying, wow, it's amazing how all the pioneers, are leaving, and the ballroom is not getting any better, and they should have been able to leave and say that the ballrooms have really evolved to something wonderful. Instead of saying, wow, I wonder what it's going to be like. It wasn't like that in my days, So, but God bless her, and I wish her family, well, and I hope that all the Pendarvises continue to pray for her and lift her up to God, and, we're going to miss her.
Okay. So you ready for tonight? Tonight's topic is about balls and all the issues that are happening at the event.
I guess I'm ready for tonight as long as people listen to who's saying what, so that there's no discrepancy in who says what, and they get the right names attached to the right conversations and to the right topics. So they get no discrepancies of anything, of any sort, and they attach the wrong names to things of that nature.
Well, one thing I do want to say is that a lot of people right now, I feel personally, again, my opinion, I could be wrong, but I feel that right now we're just under such a state of emergency that right now we are just, we're protecting our own, we're protecting our circles, and we're trying to build back what we have. And, you know, just little things, as far as even topics being misconstrued, they can just kind of set things off. So I think a lot of it is based on misunderstandings and stuff, and hopefully we can all get past that once we communicate with each other. So hopefully everything will be good. What I don't like is the people that run and call and try to spark it, you know. And I'm not talking about this one situation, but it's just been happening for so long. Kelly deals with it, you know, every Monday night when she says one little thing and then, you know, someone calls and calls and calls and calls, and by the time the message does get to that person, it's all over the place. And a lot of drama is, you know, taken, you know, from that. So I just wish it wasn't like that. I just wish it was different. But, hey, that's what we're here for, to try to make a difference. If it's just with one or two people, hopefully it'll just spread. The weather is getting warmer. Less people will be tuning in because people will be going to clubs and, you know, partying and hanging out all night and stuff, which is understandable. We will be taking a summer break. But, you know, for the few people that are on and the people that are listening, again, I say thank you. And for the ones that don't want to listen or be a part of the show and you're doing other things, have fun doing what you're doing. There's all the haters out there that have all the negative stuff to say. Fuck you and kiss my ass. So without any further ado, we're going to go to the next person that has been a part of the State of Emergency show for the past couple of weeks, the overseer of the House of Mizrahi, TJ Mizrahi. You're on the air.
What's going on, Jazzy? How are y'all tonight?
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good.
How was your evening?
Okay, just sit down and relax so I can do the show. Been at the casino all day.
How old do you have to be to gamble over there?
21. But if you go across into Canada, you only got to be 19.
You know, here in Florida, they have a casino boat that docks out of Cape Canaveral, and it goes out two times a day, and it sails out into the waters. It takes about 20 to 30 minutes, and you can gamble for about 4 to 5, sometimes on the weekends, 6 hours, and you can smoke and drink and all that stuff, and all you have to do is be 18, you know, to do it. And I've been on there twice. I've really enjoyed it.
Straight up.
Mm-hmm. It's really fun.
But I mean, we can do that when we come down there to go poolside, right?
Okay, we're not going to go into that, TJ. The next person I want to bring on is another special guest that has been part of the radio show for a while now. He is one major ballroom promoter, and he has a lot to say. Marcus Garcon, you are on the air.
Hey, everybody. Hope you're wrestling at night.
Hey,
what's going on?
Hi, Marcus.
Hi.
So are you ready for tonight and all this drama?
Hopefully it won't be drama. Hopefully it'll be, you know, engaging.
Well, I hope so. We also have another person that's sitting in with us for the first time. And he also has a fall coming up this fall, if I'm not mistaken. He'll give us some more information about that. but he is that pretty boy realness from the house of Balenciaga, Dante Balenciaga. You're on the air.
What's up, everybody? How's everybody going tonight?
Hi, Dante. Thank you so much for sitting in. When is your ball?
September 29th.
Oh, okay. And this is a ball that you're giving with Lisa Prodigy, right?
Correct.
Yeah. Correct. So I'm going to ask you a couple of questions about that shortly when we, you know, kind of get into the topic a little bit. But one thing that I do want to bring up, and we also have some callers, so if you are on the line and you want to press 1 and tune in for, you know, for the show tonight, please do, and we will go to some callers. But let's get on some of the topics really quickly. I'm also waiting for a couple of other callers to tune in. I don't know everyone's number, so if you are one of the guests that are supposed to be on, please hit me up on Facebook right now and let me know that you're there and I have your number. So I can know your number and put your name next to it and bring you on as well. Oh, we also have one more person. I forgot. Where is he? There you go. Yeah, I think you must have hung up because I had your name there. We also have that little James Kahn is coming on the air with us as well. James, are you there?
I'm here.
Hi, James.
Hey. Hi, everybody. How's everybody doing tonight?
Hey, James. How you doing?
What
so
up?
I have a Mizrahi. I have a Khan. I have a Garcon. I have a Chanel. I have a Balenciaga. And I really want to say thank you to you guys. You know, thank you to each and every one of you for being a part of the show tonight. You guys all play a major role when it comes to, you know, balls. Marcus, you've been promoting balls and, you know, giving balls. You give one major ball in the Carolinas each year. You know how it goes throwing balls. TJ, you are up-and-coming ballroom promoter as well as a participant. Dante, you are giving, I think this is your first ball this fall. And, you know, you've been in the game for a while. And little James, you make so much noise about this ballroom scene. And, you know, so up and coming, you know, making these statements and, you know, making so much noise. And, of course, RR, you know, there's nothing I can say about you. How do you guys feel individually? How do you guys feel right now balls are? Do you guys feel that you're, you know, how do you guys feel about the balls right now? What are some of the issues that you constantly see happening at these balls? I'm going to start off with you, TJ. Just give me your top 2 or 3.
The money.
When you say the money, do you mean the money not given out, too much money? What do you mean by money?
The money not being given out, people banking off making the money off the door.
Okay.
People not planning out properly and budgeting their ball correctly. That's one of the main things that I notice a lot of balls I've been to. Secondly, the promoter does not run or handle their ball. They let the commentator or a legend or somebody who think they're important that night run their own ball, then it's some shit. Then when they go to clarify it, it brings up, you never stood up to say anything about it. You let somebody else say this is what they want to do and this is how it's going to go. When it's your money, your ball, your show.
Okay. And what about another? What's the last one?
The last one, between promoters, it seems to be like if 2 or 3 people have the ball the same day, you got certain promoters that do shit to keep your ball from happening or say stuff to keep other people from coming to your ball. They throw shade on you and just say, oh, no, this will not have their money or this will not go do this. This is not going to just get everybody to come to their ball.
Okay, so we're going to call that cutthroat promoters. So you're saying money and budgeting, promoters and commentators, as well as cutthroat promotion. Marcus, give me your top 3.
Lack of respect, and that can kind of go with for the patrons. From promoter to patron and patron to promoter. second issue that's plaguing, you know, our ballroom, you know, our balls, are the, you know, just the sheer number of them, you know, the number of balls that we're having. And the third thing is kind of the, I guess the way that balls were designed from the beginning, we've never had enough structure. So kind of, I guess, the lack of organization, the way ballroom was set up from the beginning to where,
okay,
you know, is internalized structure.
Okay. Dante, we're going to go to you next. What do you feel?
I would probably say to the amount of balls along with the lack of creativity and entitlement with that, like the money hungriness of balls at this point, it seems like a lot of balls are just like, you look at the categories, there's no creativity. And it's usually because it seems like the promoters are just throwing something together to have a function so that they're able to make some money real quick and there's no thought put into them.
Okay.
Aside from that, I would probably say the violence at the balls.
Okay. And one more?
Yeah. One more. I can't really think of a third one.
Okay. And Little James, we're going to go to you, Little James. What do you think is some of the issues that you face or that you hear about when you, you know, attend these balls?
I would have to say that lack of respect is definitely, like, the number one thing. From adults to the children as well, from the children to the adults. But money is a big issue because I think sometimes it comes down to the point where people feel as though, you know, them giving out money, like, well, I think if ballroom didn't have so much money being pushed out, it wouldn't be as bad. I think when money's involved, people get a little, you know, it get over their head a little bit and everything's become more serious. Other than being fine, because balls are supposed to be fine. So I think the more money you put in, the more serious people get. And the violence, like, the violence is crazy. Like, if it's not one thing, it's another. It's always somebody trying to fight somebody.
Okay. RR, did you want to give your three?
I think it's too many judges on a panel.
Okay.
And I also think that the tables are overpriced because there's really nothing on the tables. And if the tables are going to be priced anywhere from $125 and above, they should give you your money's worth as far as 10 chairs and a very good table setting. And I think lack of security.
Lack of security. All right. Chat room, I want you guys to send over some of your topics, some of your issues as well. I want you guys to be a part of it if you can't call in. If you guys are on Facebook and you can't call in and you don't want to call in or you're too shy to call in, you can send me your messages on Facebook and I will read them as well. So basically a lot of the stuff that you guys have brought up, let's talk about them. Let's see. Which, you know, let's really talk about them and see, you know, what they are and is there a solution to them? One of the ones we want to talk about is the money. You know, let's talk about money, but money can be in so many areas, from too much money being given at the balls, like, you know, James said, or, you know,
Jasmine. Can I back you up as far as like a structure of when I think about all the questions that everybody asks? If you start with the promoter, the person giving the ball, then you can go into do they have the money, then it goes into how much money they need for this and this and that, then picking of the judges. Like, you know, the format that you use when you start your ball?
Yeah.
Because all the questions are there.
Yeah, they definitely are there. So let's talk about the money. Let's talk about budgeting. Let's talk about, you know, especially to Marcus and TJ, as well as Dante, because I know you have, you know, you have one coming up. What do you guys do when it comes to the money as far as budgeting goes? You know, I know firsthand, you know, getting a venue, You know, budgeting money for trophies, budgeting money for, you know, a budget for the evening, for your hired help and stuff. How do you guys prepare for that? And, you know, what do you guys feel that people are not doing to prepare for it? And do you feel that this is where the downfall is? What do you guys do when you go through this? I'm going to start off with you, Jess.
Well, speaking from my bar that's coming up, the way I did it was this. I knew April last year, I knew April this year, I wanted that bar. I knew what my cap was that I was going to spend that night. I knew what I needed to put aside from the first bar. And what I did is I started with the venue, trophies, commentator. I basically did a budget narrative, wrote every single line item down that I had, how much cash I wanted to give away, what was needed, and everything. I came up with a ballpark figure. And month by month, through a 12-month stretch, I actually was adding money into my bank account, building it up to reach that gold pot. So when the day of the bar, I'm not worried about, am I going to be $2,500 short or do I need to make it off the door? I know I got everything done. And then I started crossing certain line items off months before the bar. Commentator paid for, venue paid for, DJ paid for. The more things that you get budgeted for and paid off, by the time the bar get here, it's more of an easier ride.
Okay. Marcus, what are some of the things that you do in pre-planning for your ball?
Well, the first thing that I do is I tell myself that, one, it'll be nice to make money, but I have to constantly remind myself that I don't want to take any shortcuts that would basically take away from the prestige of the event just to make money. Because we all know we can do things to save a dollar. After that, I sit down with whoever I'm having the ball with, whether that's an organization or the other promoters, and we basically just say, you know, this is what we want to do. From there, there's just a dialogue and conversation. Is this realistic? You know, my mind frame in having a ball is basically once I put everything together, whether I walk out the door broke, you know, but having not made anything, that's what I don't mind. So when you add everything in, your venue, your trophies, your categories, you know, everything you're going to pay, and divide it by that $30, is this a realistic number of people that I think can come? So when I hear people saying they're giving away $7,500 and, you know, $8,000 and they got a $10,000 venue, you know, when you divide that by $30, do you really think 600 people are going to show up to your ball just for you to break even? And if that's not possible, and you know that's your goal to at least break even, you know, we reconsider. So that's the first thing I do. Just think about it realistically.
Okay. And Dante, what steps have you started taking in advance? We know that you have a ball coming up, and it's a few months away. But have you taken any major steps as far as, you know, getting this ball prepared? Like, at this early in advance, what have you done?
Well, for one, I work every day so that I'm able to have money coming in. I've started setting aside a certain amount out of each paycheck into a separate account so that I am building up money for grand prizes. Lisa is saving up money as well. We also went over what categories we plan on putting our money up for the categories. I mean, for which categories we plan on putting up money for. And then also I have quite a few house members, and then Lisa has some house members and some friends that actually have came to us and offered to sponsor categories. I do know that, like, learning from when the twins had their ball, that sometimes you have people that say they'll sponsor categories and don't come through, so you need to be prepared to have that money if they don't. So we made sure that the categories that are going to be sponsored are within amounts that if these people didn't come through by a certain date that we give them, we will be able to put that money up ourselves. So like TJ said, when it comes down to the ball night, everything is already in envelopes, and you're not running around trying to grab money from the person working the door to be able to pay for these prizes. Aside from that, as Marcus said, you don't want to mess up the prestige of the ball, and with this being my first ball and Lisa's first ball as well, our major thing is not to make money off of the ball, but we want to give an exciting, fun ball that's going to make people talk about it for a long time that will hopefully end up being ball of the year. So basically we're going over budgets for the bar, for commentators, the venue, et cetera, and making sure all of that is taken care of. And we'll have basically, by September, we should have everything covered by then.
Okay. Now, Little James, I don't know what role you're playing in your house ball that is coming up, I think, in June or July, but were you delegated any type of responsibilities from writing categories to venue searching? And so what role do you play in a major house ball, you know, being in the position that you are in?
I did help write a couple categories, but that's pretty much it. My dad is taking care of everything for the most part.
Okay, and when your guys' ball is when?
It is. Hold on, I'm sorry. It's July 29th. I just want to make sure it's July 29th.
Okay, okay. So, you know, I think that what happens with balls themselves, I think what we're all pretty much saying is we all need to pre-plan. And, you know, definitely pre-planning for the ball is the most important thing, and putting your money aside, because, you know, no matter what anyone thinks, it's not easy throwing a ball. Having a ball is not easy. Why do you guys think I do it every 2 years? It's just a lot. And when you are one individual doing a ball, imagine. You guys have all been to a collections ball, and you guys see how it goes. It's a lot. So I know how it goes. I've done it by myself. I've done it with a group of people. I've done it with a few people, you know, one individual. It's just a lot. So you have to pre-plan it, and that is the most important thing that you can do. I think we lost Dante, but he is back. Dante, are you back?
Yes, I'm back.
Okay. So now we're going to move on to, you know, the decorations, the tables, and things of that sort. Let's just go to planning that. A lot of people feel that, and believe me, this is going to get very interesting and hot. Even though we're just talking about getting into the ball, we are going to talk about all the fucked up categories, the judges, the girlfriend panels, the icons and legends, and all the rest of that bullshit. Favoritism, houses only voting for their house members, chopping other house members so their people can win. Oh, we're going to get on that one as well. But we're just trying to walk into the ball right now. When it comes time to planning tables and decorations and giving these people their $30 worth or their table money worth, what do you guys feel is lacking, and what do you guys do as promoters to prepare yourself for that? What do you guys put into it? TJ.
Well, what I'm putting into it as far as, like, technically, I hate when I go to a bar. We pay $100, $75, $150, and we get a table and a tablecloth. Because, honestly, I really don't sit at tables like that. But when I have to put my money in on the tablecloth, it kind of pisses me off. So I made it personal for sure that my bar, if you purchase a table, you're not just going to get a tablecloth. You get, it's something on the table. Like this year, I'm doing a sub platter, a cheesecake platter, and a fruit platter all on the tables, and about some type of beverage I'm going to put on it. Most bars you go to, you might get some confetti or a bag of a dollar bag of chips that they put in the bowl. And you're like, damn, I spent $100 for this. And I look at people like, damn, y'all could have stood y'all asses up for this. This wasn't even worth the extra $100 I just gave them. And then sometimes it'd be like, you pay $30 into the bar, and say if it's in the wintertime, the building be freezing cold. Like, come on now, you know these kids coming in here, half of them about to already be half naked, one. Can we at least get some heat? I mean, shit, don't freeze everybody.
Okay. Marcus, what do you feel about it?
Okay, I'm a little torn with the whole table situation, okay?
Mm-hmm.
While I'm someone who generally goes really out for the tables, when I go to a VIP club, and let's say I go to VIP and I buy a table, there's nothing that comes on that table. I still have to pay for the bottle when I get there. So I think that people need to realize that, one, some certain types of tables are just marketed as somewhere to sit. You pay your admission into the ball to really be have the right to compete and to win cash prizes. You pay for a table mainly to have somewhere to sit if you want to sit, because you really don't have to purchase a table. That's just really optional. However, and I've seen tables that are $40, $50, $75, and honestly, anything under $150, I don't even expect anything on the table anymore. Whether that is that, you know, poor decision on mine, no, but that's, you know, maybe, but that's kind of what I expect. For $150 or $200, I also think that people need to realize that promoters, you know, we have to bring those tables and chairs in. And honestly, a lot of times they're not cheap, depending on where you're having the event at. Sometimes you can find a space where the tables and chairs are included. Oftentimes you have to rent them from a party rental place. And if your table's $100, you could easily spend 40 or 50 of those dollars on getting tables and chairs, because they might charge you $2 per chair and $10 to $15 to $20 per table, depending on, plus, you know, the tablecloth and things like that. With that, you know, I choose to, you know, have my tables at $200. That's for a major event. And for the most part, I've, you know, pretty much never gotten a complaint on what the people got after the fact. They're always happy because it's fully loaded. But I do understand some promoters who, you know, who are basically offering it as just basically a thing to seat. I just think they should print that on the flyer, that this is a place for you to sit, almost like when you go to a VIP club.
Okay. Dante, what are some of your plans for your tables at your ball, and what are some of the issues that you have faced when you, you know, went to pay, you know, tables for your houses and stuff, for your house and stuff, and some of the problems that you have witnessed?
Well, for our ball, we're trying to find the most creative and, like, decorative way of decorating the tables that will go along with the theme. So, of course, you know, decorations for the table are a must, I feel. That the decorations on the table shouldn't just be a tablecloth, but they should go along with the theme of whatever the ball is. Secondly, I think that we're trying to figure out what food would go the best with the theme of the ball as well. Like, we want everything to basically fall into with the theme. We want it to be from the beginning to the end, from when we roll out our flyers, our actual flyers to people, from there on to when they walk into the ball, to they get to the table, to the end of the night. We want it to be with the theme. We want everything to say theme. As far as the problems that I've noticed in the past, I agree with what has already been said. Which was that, I mean, you get a table and then it's like you paid $100 and some and you may get a sandwich. Like CJ said, sometimes it's just a bowl of chips or like a few sodas or something like that, or one bottle of wine or something that they probably paid about $20 for, and you spent $100 on it. But as Marcus said also, though, people do have to realize that buying a table is optional, and that buying a table secures you a good spot of seeing the show as well. So.
Yeah, I do agree with that. All right, how do you feel about that? Because I'm with Marcus on that one. You know, I've witnessed how having, you know, buying these tables, I mean, running these tables, running the chairs, decorating the place, going through all that stuff for tables just for people to just throw their stuff on it, their outfits, what they're walking in, their coats and jackets, depending on when the ball is given. Everyone's standing all over the tables, all over the table, you know, all over the chairs and stuff. And in all honesty, it's just a place that, you know, people have a better view of what's going on and they don't have to stand up. But, you know, what is your opinion on it, you know, compared to how it used to be, how it is now? What is your personal feel on that?
In the beginning, back in the early 80s, when they were having balls, the tables were $25, and it was like he said, it was just for seating. They didn't put anything on the tables. then the 90s rolled around, and the houses wanted to start emulating other houses. And I think the first house to ever decorate a ballroom fabulously and have everything on the tables was the House of Extravaganza. And when you came into their ballroom, it was spectacular. So after seeing that, everybody who had a ball after that started to emulate, making sure they had something on their tables. But when you put it in retrospect, you do have to understand that it's at the promoter's discretion what they want to put on the table now that we're actually having this conversation, because it doesn't say that tables are $150 with. It just says tables are $150.
Okay. Okay. Well, I do agree, like, with what Dante says. You know, Dante said, and with what the extravaganzas did, you know, I think it's all a part of the aura when you walk into the ballroom to have the decorations and everything matching up with the theme of the ball, from the decorating of the venue to the judges' panel, yeah, to the tables, to everything. Because when you walk into that atmosphere, you want to feel it and you want to see it.
Can I say something while I'm thinking about it? This is a ball is supposed to be, let's say, an awards ball. An awards ball is supposed to be our Academy Awards, right? When you watch the Academy Awards on TV or the Grammys or something of that nature, they're sitting at ballroom tables. They've had their coffee and their tea or whatever they had before the show started. But then you notice that on the tables they have champagne. They have stuff to keep them occupied, munchies, while they're watching the event. So it brings an ambiance of fabness and comfortability while you're sitting there. So I think it also reflects the fact that it gives you something to feel more grandeur about. Do you understand what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
But I can also say this. I believe that now ballroom is really kind of pushed it to the limits, because there are things that we could probably have do in the early 90s or 2000s that we just simply can't do anymore. You just simply can't put a bottle of wine or champagne on a table at a legal venue, a venue that's just going to allow that, because you have 8 people that are under 21 coming in. And so if you're trying to follow the rules along with, you know, trying to be fair, you know, sometimes that's why I've seen people have sodas on the tables, or sometimes the promoter don't drink, period. So they don't advocate, you know, putting a bottle of wine. Do you guys think that the patrons' expectations of what comes on the table is honestly realistic? Because I've been to a ball where they've had caviar on the table. Well, and we all know caviar is expensive, but no one ate it. And, you know, with the other stuff on the table, people feel they didn't get their money's worth. What should be on a table for $150 or $200, realistically?
Usually when I think realistically about a table, I'm going to give you a primary example, because it was like one of the most spectacular balls that I was a part of, and I really want to thank Andre and Stuart for giving me the opportunity, as well as myself giving them the opportunity for us to come together as icons and do the Icon Ball in Atlanta, Georgia. And we were all delegated something to do, but we all sat down and planned it together, and we wanted to make sure that not only the trophies were spectacular, that the ballroom looked spectacular, and that it was a fabulous ballroom. We all stayed on each other's ass. They had to stay on my ass a little more than each other, I guess, but I'm from the old school. I'll get it done. Trust me, I'm going to get it done. That's me. But at the end of the day, the tables, because it was 3 icons, it had to represent who we were. So not only were we going to give you something on your tables, which we gave you munchies, we gave you food, we gave you giveaways, we gave you posters, and we gave you bags to take home. That has never been done before. You understand? So it was an extravagant table set up and a door giveaway, but these are the things that made us who we are today by being icons. You understand? We had to show everybody this is how it should be done. And if you can't do it that way, you can do it similar, but don't forget that this is something that people expect after seeing this. So after seeing something like I saw with the extravaganzas, then I go to another ball and all they have is a tablecloth, I feel slighted.
Okay. I want to ask Little James what he feels about tables, and then we're going to go into another topic about this. Little James, what do you feel like when you go to balls and you get your, you know, you get to your house table and things of that sort? What are the things that you kind of look for or feel that you were ripped off, or do you ever feel you were ripped off, or are you just one of the people that really don't focus on tables, you focus on other things?
Well, actually, I do feel as though tables should have some type of decorations, maybe a drink or two. And I don't drink, and when I say drink, I mean something like at least a bottle of water. You know, you had like RR said back in the day, it would be a table, it would be $25, but now you have people paying $150, $200 for a table with nothing but a tablecloth. I just feel like that's a cheat. I feel like, I just feel like, you know, you put a bunch of money up for nothing. You for a place to sit, really. If that's the case, then nobody should charge for tables and you should just sit where you want to sit. But I feel like a table should have something. Like, if you want to be extra generous, then put a fruit basket there or, you know, something like that. But don't just make somebody pay $200 or $150 just to sit at a table and have to go over to the bar and pay $5 for a cranberry juice, because that's how much I pay at a bar. Like, you know, I go to a ball and we pay $200 for a table, and I have to go over to the bar to get a cranberry juice, and it's $5 for a cup that has a bunch of ice in it, so I really don't even have a half a cup of cranberry juice for real. But I do feel that tables been as though for the last past couple of years, and now that are said it, that years ago, they actually have done more to the tables. It's, you know what I'm saying, things change with time, and I just feel like tables should have a little bit more, more for people that's there that pay their money. You know, you have tables. If that's the case, then when you pay your $100, nobody should be able to stand in front of your table. But that's what happens. Like, you have somebody who pays their money, and then you have nothing but a bunch of spectators. You have people from other houses, and all that standing in front of your table, and you can't say nothing because nobody, you know, nobody's enforcing the fact that this is this house or that house table. You can't stand here. So it's like, I do feel cheated at times, and I think it's a big deal when you go to a ball and you pay your money to sit somewhere and you're not even comfortable, or you're sitting there dehydrated because you don't carry cash and you don't have enough money in your pocket to actually get something from the bar. So that's one thing I will let ballroom know, that they will have the con ball. The con ball tables will look nice. I can't remember how much the tables are, but you'll be definitely comfortable at your tables. You'll have drinks. You'll have something to eat there. We'll have a lot to offer with our tables, because I think it's a scam and it's ridiculous.
Can I say this, Jasmine and everyone else? Do you think that the reason the tables were so much fabber back in the early 90s?
I think you're reading my mind, because I was about to say something about that.
Because the magic... The magic was fabulous.
Thank you. And that's exactly where I was about to take this. I was about to say the same damn thing. And it was also going to go into the next line of the topic, which is trophies, as well as next week's State of Emergency show is going to be based on fast money, prostitution, crafting, magic, and all the rest of the shenanigans. That's what we are going to be talking about next week. But yes, RR, you did take the words out of my mouth. Do you think the lack of decorations, tables, and what we are about to talk about right now, the damn fucked up trophies that we are seeing at these balls, is because it is not as easy as it was to acquire those types of things as it was back then now? What do you guys feel about that?
Well, honestly, that may be a reason, but I also just think that people want to take the – I think that's just one of those ways to cut corners. Because some people who divvle or dabble in magic, it's certainly available. Those individuals are really, what's the word, kind of at times ripping you off. You know, based on, you know, I guess the going rate per se, what people charge and what people are willing to pay, you know, the Crown Awards sells trophies for $3. So people feel as though if they're giving away something, why would they go pay someone X amount of dollars and, you know, and to get these trophies that a lot of people are going to leave on the table. I can't tell you how many trophies I saw laying around at the Midwest Awards Ball this year, like this past weekend after the ball. So why would I give you a $100 trophy or $50 trophy or this sterling silver or crystal trophy that, you know, cost all this money and you may end up leaving it there. Or maybe you just didn't care about what the trophy was and you left it because it was not, in your opinion, worthy of keeping. But, you know,
I think that's probably what the case is. Most people, if they receive something that's really fabulous, they're going to take it with them. Even if they peel the label off, they're going to keep the award. You understand? Mm-hmm. But if it's something that looks like it came from the 99-cent store or that you cut and paste, they're not going to – they'd be like, child, please. Have you ever noticed that when people see the trophies, that the trophies aren't up to par and they win their categories, they just walk away? They don't even walk up
there
to get their trophy?
Yeah, they just walk away. I want to ask that question to people like Dante, Little James, and TJ. How do you guys feel about trophies? Do you value the trophies? Like, you know, I know back in the day, the trophies, I mean, you walk into a person's house, they would have trophies all over the place. Nowadays, I don't even think people take the trophies home. Is it because the trophies are just not as fab or people just don't really care about them anymore? I'm going to start with you, Little James. How do you feel about trophies, and do you even honor them anymore, or you just pay it?
Well, personally, I don't really care for a trophy too much unless it looks appealing to me. If a trophy looks like it came from the dollar store, then I really don't really think twice about it. Like, I think that's when you walk in a ball before the ball even starts, that's, you look at the setup, you look at, like, the trophies, you look at the decorations and stuff like that. If the trophy doesn't catch my eye, then it's not something I look forward to once I win my category. So, like, if the trophy
now,
is not doing
keep your
anything,
thought, James. James, please keep your thought. Let me just say this to you. When you look at the trophies, if it's a trophy that you like, do you say to yourself, bitch, I got to get one of those trophies? And it does it make you pump harder for your category?
It does. It does.
Okay.
It actually does. I have like, a handful of trophies here in my own, like, my house. And I've won plenty of trophies, but I have a handful of them that I've actually kept or trophies that I actually went to get. Like, you know, I just feel like sometimes when you pay $30 to get into a ball. And the 99-cent store, let's say you have 19 categories. One person pays for each and every one of your trophies. That's like, I think that's not, where's the value in that? Like, where's the care for the support? Like, you know, when people support you, give them something back in return. Give them something to look at or remember your ball by. So I do think it's a big deal when trophies aren't as appealing. And it don't mean that you have to spend $1,000 on 19 trophies or whatever like that, but just make sure that the trophies are somewhat eye-catching or at least put a label on them. That way, you know, it can show that you care about you cared about the fact that you threw in the ball and you hand the trophies out. I can remember sometimes. I know I have trophies in here that I don't even remember what ball I won from. So because they don't have labels on them. It's just a trophy with a tag on the bottom that was scanned from a store.
And you know what else I think too, when talking about trophies, is that when you have an awards ball, if you and the people who put the awards together and you knew who the winners were gonna be, why wouldn't you put their names on the trophies for what they won? So when they receive their trophy, it's already on the trophy.
You know why?
I'm gonna be honest about that. Well, go ahead, Marcus. I'm sorry.
Well, the reason why we don't do that in North Carolina is, one, we don't count the ballots until the night before, or actually the day of sometimes, so no one thinks that we know the winners. in
advance. Oh, that's fair. That's fair.
And then secondly, but what we will do is we'll print up, like, you know, like the Oscars that have the cards.
Right.
And, you know, like you pull it out. We will have that. And so they get that and the envelope. But a lot of
right.
times people don't print the names on the trophies because, honestly, when you call a trophy company, when you're paying for it, when they see Ball on it or Butch Queen, they want to call and verify and ask to see your card and all of this. So, I mean, honestly, I would never want to, you know, set somebody's house up. You know, you print somebody's, you know, you print Garcon on the thing, and they're like, well, hold up, let me investigate this. And, you know, we're already
mm-hmm.
under investigation.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why a lot of promoters don't get things on them, period. They, you know, they may get their trophies from one source and they may get their nameplates from another.
Right.
No, I
Dante,
understand.
Dante, how
trophies,
do you feel about the trophies?
I kind of agree with basically everything Lil James already said about them. I know when my first year, I, like, collected them because I was, like, really excited about starting to be involved in some period. But after that, I mean, for the most part, most of the trophies, they all look the same. They all look, you know, very basic and mediocre. And so it wasn't really a thing to keep them and hold on to them. Nothing. They made you want to hold on to them. So,
okay.
I mean, I do agree that I think that if the trophies were, they do need to be more eye-catchable and more creative, and I think it would make people want to hold on to them more. If they walked in somewhere and they seen those on the tables, they would, I mean, seen those on the setup, it would make them want to walk more and make the talent in the room that night more competitive because they would want to win the trophy. They look good up there.
But do y'all
okay.
do you guys think, oh, well, I'm sorry.
We're going to bring on another guest, Janice Mizrahi from Detroit. Mizrahi from Detroit, you're on the air. Janice, are you there?
Good evening. Yes, I am. Hi, everybody.
Hey,
hi, Janice. Now, Janice,
hey.
I know that you have given many balls, and you have put a lot into your trophies and things of that sort. Give us your opinion and your take on all this.
Yeah, I was listening to the topics and to everybody's different opinion, and I wanted to just call in and give another perspective. A lot of the stuff that Marcus was saying is totally true. I think that nowadays the ballroom has really taken such a shift that everything is basically shifting around incentives and what I can do to appease you to get you here and what I can do to make you feel like it's fab enough for you to come. When I started walking balls and the people of my era and stuff and my different friends and stuff that we've grown up through ballroom together, we weren't so hung up on what the trophies look like, what you were offering me on a table, because we were so engulfed in our creativity and trying to work on our look and whatever category that we were working on, that we weren't sitting up being so picky and so petty and so tit for tattish. And I think now that it's just kind of shifted a long way to the point where a couple weeks ago I heard it was conversations about now someone was discussing starting asking people, making sure before the ball that all their money is in the envelope and stuff. I'm like, really? Like, are you serious? Realistically speaking, everybody does not just have money sitting around. Me, myself, I work, I hustle, I do the very best that I can. I have a staple ball that is given every year for the past 12 years in Detroit, and it's the Detroit Awards Ball. And every year, and TJ can tell y'all, I give my awards ball by myself. I do not do the whole collaborating because I feel like more people, more problems. And sink or swim, when you give your opinion of my ball, I'd rather it all come back to me. So I bust my ass to go around, to stay with the theme of my ball. Anybody who knows me knows that I love the glamour side of being a lady. I love the heels, the furs, and the jewelry and stuff. So that's how my ball is. I usually don't have a kind of hip-hop, down-home kind of ball. It's always about glamour and golds and silvers and different things like that. So me personally, I always have a crystal trophy. Now, some people may accept that. Some people may not. But I don't think that you could generally speak and say whether or not a person is doing enough if you aren't that person. When you give any ball, but especially a ward ball, you are responsible for picking the right person to give their achievement to and to tell them a job well done for that year. You are responsible for security. You are responsible for liquor. You are responsible for hotel rooms. You are responsible for safety coming in and out at the venue. You're responsible for so many things, and you wear so many hats. You can't please everybody. So when I hear those type of conversations, you know, it's easy to jump in and say, oh, well, I feel like she should have had this, or I feel like she should have had that. But how about most of those people that's sitting back with so much to say, they aren't even the ones out there walking and participating. They aren't even the ones. They aren't even the ones who are continuing the legacy of the ballroom. They're just sitting back and just got so much to say and never add to it. My response to those type of people is always: you give a ball. You put your name on some paper and you put it out, and you put a cash and you put your phone number, and you open yourself up to all that type of ridicule and that backlash, some love, some support. But I think that it's just become a little too petty. And I think that it's kind of harsh, especially when somebody has done their best to present whatever they can with you. Me, myself, personally, I do the VIP sitting, and I make sure that I specify that on my category sheet. This is not the Palms Hotel. You are not coming to the Waldorf Astoria, so do not expect a swag bag and all of that stuff. This is VIP sitting. This is for you to properly be able to sit and still enjoy the ball without the crowd, without the looking through someone. It's VIP seating. If you want to eat, grab a bite before you get there. Wait till you go home. Like, are you really expecting to come to a ball and just be taken care of like you at the hotel?
Okay. Well, y'all heard that from her.
You know what I'm saying? And it's, no, it's like, you know, I'm not trying to be like a bitchy, but it's like, come on now, how much do you expect? It's like nowadays, you damn if you do, damn if you didn't. Like, for instance, my grand prize. This was the first time I did a $1,000 independent grand prize. I asked for performance. Nobody brought the performance. But then after the ball is over, oh, she didn't want to give out the money. You think she had the money? I'm going to always have the money. Like, the money wasn't the problem, but nobody brought it. But nobody's speaking about that. They're just saying, oh, well, she didn't give it out. Well, why didn't I give it out? Nobody came down there who deserved it, so what should I do? Oh, I should open up. No, I'm not going to open it.
Well, we're going to be talking about categories in a few moments, Janice, so I want you to sit right there. I'm going to leave you on, though, so you can just tune, you know, speak whenever you want. But pretty much before we get into some of the other stuff, as far as judges, panels, commentators, categories, the way the categories are written, the misunderstanding of categories, and things of that sort. Let's take a few callers because I don't want them to sit online all night and get some of their opinions on it. The first caller is 937-999. You're on the air. 937-999. You're on the air. Okay. I'm hanging up on you because I don't even know a 999 number like that. 718-304, you're on the air.
Hello, everyone.
Hi.
Hi. About the trophies, I feel personally, and this is my opinion, I feel that, you know, the people don't care about, you know, the trophies, because the simple fact is that as long as you're seen, as long as I'm on YouTube, I can care less about a trophy. And I think that's how a lot of people feel right now, because back then there was no YouTube. But now you have the internet. Everyone's able to get on the internet. As long as they're on the internet and they're on YouTube and you can see that they snatched, they won grand prize or whatever have you, who cares about a trophy? And I think that's just being realistic. So it doesn't matter what the trophy looks like. And as long as I'm being seen and you can see what I did, I'm good. And I think a lot of people think that way.
Well, thank you, caller. I'm gonna. I want you to call back in if you want to press one again. If you want to speak, but thank you for that input. 301-915. You're on the air.
Hello.
Hello.
Hi. Hey, everybody. This is Keo Allure. And
hi.
I want to make a hello.
Hey,
hello.
Yeah.
Hey, Dante. Hey, James. Hey, Marcus.
Hey,
TJ and Janie. I want to take it back because you guys been hopping topics. I want to take it back to the beginning. RR made a comment a couple of weeks ago that there are just too many balls. The novelty has worn off, and everybody is just churning out these balls like knockoff purses. They just keep bringing them and bringing them and bringing them, and people keep patronizing them. So, you know, people need to realize just because it's a ball, you know, stay home, you know. And there's so many balls, so many, like, these seedy balls overshadowing the actual good balls, you know. And I understand there's some good balls that, you know, may have a hot venue or whatever. Like the Prestige Ball in Philly, it was a really nice ball. Yes, it was hot, but it was a good ball, you know. And one thing I can say about my house, and it's kind of hurt us, I can admit that, is that we don't go to every ball. You know, you don't see Allures at every ball. You know, it's not necessary to go to, you know, Rinky Dink Ball in, you know, Bumbletown, you know, so on and so, just because they're giving out $1,000. You know, it's like have some type of, you know, some exclusivity, some type of, you know, like make it a treat to be seen, you know, as a group.
Well,
you know,
yeah, this is. We are going to talk about that. We are going to talk about the balls and the money in a second. We are going to be getting to that as well. So I'm going to put you on hold, and we are going to go back to you as far as too many balls and why everyone is going to everybody's balls across the country. Are they running to these balls because they're trying to make a dollar?
Because of money.
Yeah. Is it because of the money or because of they have nothing else to do? Why are they not saving it for the exclusive balls? So we are going to talk about that. But, Keo, I'm going to come back to you in a second. But I want to just take a couple of other callers that may want to touch up on what we did talk about in the beginning really quickly before we go to the next topic. So please stay right there. But 434-326, you're on the air. 434-326. Okay, he's too loud. 215-856, you're on the air.
Hello, good morning, everyone. How are you?
Hi.
Great,
how are you?
How's everyone on the panel and everyone out there in radio land? I just want to speak on, because when I started listening, I heard you guys talking about trophies, and then you guys started talking about venues, et cetera. But for me, when I started walking balls, which was the early 90s, in reference to trophies, it's funny because one of the trophies that I'll always cherish, and it's sad that unfortunately I don't have it anymore because I was moving just recently a couple years ago and it got broken in the process of me moving, was in 1993, one of my sweethearts, which was Patrick Ebony, had a ball in 1993. The trophy was like a slate gray marble, trophy, and it was so beautiful, and I always kept that trophy because it was so beautiful, and I kept it all the way up until the 2000s, and like I said, and we're talking like over a decade that I've kept this trophy because it was so beautifully made, and it was unfortunate that in the process of my moving that the trophy got broken, but I actually like to see very nice trophies because maybe that's because, you know, when I first got into the ballroom scene, that's what I was used to seeing was, you know, nice trophies, and that was a big deal. You know, a trophy was everything. You know, before, like, the money and all that other stuff got involved with the ballroom scene, it was all about trophy. And also, too, sometimes even if you didn't win, it was always about I was going to walk and participate in the ball and make them know what they was going to be. They was going to not forget me that particular night. So it was one of those. It was one of those. I'm gonna show up and I'm gonna show out. And then the second issue, not issue, but the second thing that I have is you guys were talking about venues and tables and stuff, and I think the tables and the venues, that's all a representation of the promoter at the end of the day. Uh-huh. If I feel like if I'm coming into a ball and I do, I'm very into details. So if I go to a ball and I participate at someone's ball, you know, I'm going to look at the trophies. I'm going to look at the tables. I'm going to look at the arrangement that is on the tables. You know, you can have a nice little cooler, I guess, with some bottled water. That's not too much to ask. And maybe a few little hors d'oeuvres and things of that nature. So it's all about presentation at the end of the day. And I was listening to what RR was saying about him, Stuart, and Andre, and that makes a lot of sense. Like, you know, sometimes when you give people a wonderful environment and setting, people tend to adapt to that environment. And, you know, they calm down, you know, it's not a whole lot of tension and craziness and stuff like that, and people sit there and enjoy themselves and converse, and, you know, so it's a lot of that's involved with the whole setup of the ball, and, you know, and that's a good representation of the promoter. Third of all, I know this is not this doesn't have anything to do with the balls, but I know the awards ball is actually coming up on the 31st, and this has been on my mind, and I actually been posting this on my Facebook page, and I want, because I'm kind of nervous about what's going to happen in November 6, 2012, I would like to, because I said I'm going to contact Andre and Jack. We need to make sure in every state, because our governor here just signed a bill into law for voter ID. And I want to make sure to all the young people out there that are listening to make sure that they have the proper paperwork and make sure they go and get their license or their state ID so that they can register to vote, because this election is going to be so crucial for everyone. And that's what I had to get that off my chest. And I didn't want to jump off the ballroom stuff, but I just had to put that out there that, you know, because that's very important,
right,
at the end
but
of the
you're
day.
You're right about that. I give you kudos on that one, yes.
So, Tony, explain to the people that are listening exactly what is happening with that, and not to steer off the subject, but that is very important. Explain to everyone what is actually happening and how they're changing the whole voting process.
You know, for minorities in 20 – in, hello?
Yeah, we're here. Somebody mute your phone if you have a loud background because we're getting feedback.
Okay. In 2008, the United States of America, and especially for minorities, we made history by electing the first African American as president of the United States. Then what happened was, you know, some of us got too content and too comfortable, and in 2010, when we had the midterm elections, voter turnout was actually very low, because I actually went and voted, and when I went to my polling place, you know, I would have never even thought that it was actually the day to vote, because that's how low the voter turnout was. So what happened was, in 2010, pretty much in every state, Republican governors have swept through every state. It was like a landslide. And actually, President Obama actually made a statement himself, and he said that the Democrats actually took a shellacking. That was the word that he used, the term that he used. And I just don't want everyone to think just because we made history in 28 that we can sit back and sit by the wayside and then complain later because our needs are not being met or what have you. You know, change doesn't happen overnight, and change takes time. So if you're one of those people that thinking just because we elected the African-American president, the first one in the United States of America, that things are going to happen overnight for you and things is going to be peachy and cream, then you were in it for the wrong reason. And I just want each and every one of you out there to make sure you have the proper, either your birth certificate and all your proper paperwork, your bills or pay stubs or what have you. If you're not registered to vote, make sure you do it now. Do not wait till November 5th, November 1st, because then it'll be too late. Because then the excuse will be, well, we didn't have enough time to get to you. So I just want to make sure, like now, if you're in college or if you're living in another state, you can always send in for your absentee ballot and make sure you get that in advance, so that, because this 2012 November 6th election is going to be so crucial for each and every one of us at the end of the day.
Can I say this to you?
Yes, sweetheart.
People do not even understand that the Republicans are the ones that are holding President Obama back because of the simple fact
Absolutely.
That they didn't think that he would be able to do as much as he has done thus far. So everything that's being done is like a magnet. Everything he's trying to do, the two forces are trying to come against him because he's doing what he can, but the forces that are against him are a lot stronger than the forces he has that are with him. So we have become one so that this man can be back in office to clean up what he has started. Because remember, when he got into office, everything was a mess. And if those Republicans get in there, if you think we're in a recession now, let those Republicans get in there. You're really going to see what a recession is.
And you know what? Just on a political aspect of things, and we're going to get back into the ball stuff, I just want all of us to keep in mind and always, when we get up in the morning and we get ourselves together, just keep in mind that we all stand on the shoulders of giants. And there were people who've made a great deal of sacrifice for us to walk around free like we are today. And now back to the ballroom stuff. I talked about the tables. I talked about the venues. And also, you know what was one of my most fabulous balls that I've been to that I really had a great time at, and the venue was absolutely fabulous? It was Jack and Andre Awards Ball in Times Square in New York City. They had attendance in the bathroom, so in the female bathroom, only women can go in the women's bathroom. The bathrooms were very clean. I didn't have to, like, pull my dress up and was scared to step in the urine and feces and cigarette butts and things of that nature, especially, you know, when you're wearing beautiful clothing. You don't want us to come out and, you know, and just step in a bunch of mess. That was one of the best venues that I had ever been to throughout my ballroom history and career.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Connie, and thank you for sharing those words with us. I guess we need to have a special show in reference to, you know, presidency and voting, this year, because this is a very important year for all of us. So we might have to tune in and do something special for the community in reference to that soon. But, Tanya, I'm going to put you right there and stay on with us, you know, and come back on if you have anything to say, okay?
I sure will, sweet love.
All right. Thank you so much. The next caller is 267-324. You're on the air.
Hi, everyone. What's up? I have a very quick question. I have two quick questions. This might show my ignorance, but I wanted to know what's magic exactly, because earlier on you guys were referencing crafting, and I'm familiar with what that is, but what's magic?
Crafting.
It's okay. And I think when it comes to the whole situation with the tables at a ball, if you are going to a certain house's ball, and that house is known to be, you know, Banji, I think that you should only expect the bare minimums. The seating is preferred seating to be able to view the performers the best at the end of the day. When you have a ball up, a house that goes above and beyond and gets known for that and starts giving that, I think you should be able to know, okay, I'm going to go to the legendary House of Extravaganza's ball, and I'm not going to sit here with just a tablecloth and a bottle of water. It's going to be fabulous. But if I go to another house that will be remain nameless, it's just going to be the table. And you should know to expect that.
I don't agree with that. I think it has to do with the theme. I think it has to do with, number one, the promoter. Number two, the individuals. But you can't tell me that, you know, a house that's known for being Banji, but yet they're giving you this opulent ball. You know, this is a way of redeeming themselves or giving you another persona of them. I don't agree with that at all.
And I think that we get so hung up on saying what people should do that we lose appreciation for what people do. Because me, myself, personally, I don't go all out on the tables, but I make sure that everyone is taken care of and happy at my events. And I always, at some point of the night, I open my bar completely up, and I give everything that's left away for free because I don't like to bring anything home. So where you may say, well, she didn't do this, but what about what I did do?
And that's the stuff people don't talk about, you know. And just to piggyback on what you said as far as a house being a Banji house, the House of Ebony is known for being a realness house. They are definitely real. They've been real for years. It's a realness house. But they gave one of the most fabulous balls in Atlanta when they gave out that $5,000. They had it in a beautiful venue. They had beautiful tables, and they had all their cash. You was there, Jasmine. You know what I'm talking about. At the art gallery, the Ebony's. The Ebony's House Ball, where
it
was beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
So, like she said, you can't really say because of the house is known for being a realness house, or a house is known for being a base house, or a house is known for being a label house, that's going to make a difference.
No, it doesn't make a difference at all, not in my eyes. But Ghost Whisper, thank you for calling in. Please call back and press 1 because we have to clear the lines. We got a lot of callers tonight, and a lot of people are tuning in. What is the weather like up there? I thought it was all nice and everybody else be hanging out and stuff. We got another caller, 410963. You're on the air.
Hi, everybody.
Hi.
Hello. Hi, I would like to comment on what Janice Mizrahi said earlier. In my opinion, she was 100% correct. What she said to me showed that she is a ball promoter who gives a ball not for rent and not for a girlfriend panel, but because she cares. Everything she said to me was, like, right on. And I also would like to thank Tiny Cartier for calling in and proving that she is the icon that she is to bring real politics into the ballroom. And Jasmine, I can't wait for you to have that show. Thank you.
Thank you so much, caller. And again, please call back because I got to clear some of the lines for more callers. and press 1 if you want to come back on. And one more last caller before we go to one of our next guests and we change the topic a little bit. The last caller is 718-304. You're on the air.
I'm sorry. I'm just listening. I don't have anything to say right now.
Okay. Do me a favor and press 1 again so I can get you out of queue, and I really appreciate it. Harold, you are on the air.
Good evening, Jasmine, and I'm not even sure who's on also with you. I just, like, tuned in and hit 1, so I'm not sure who else is on the phone.
We have TJ,
hey, Robin,
Marcus, R.R., Little James Khan, Janice Mizrahi, Dante, and you.
Well, hello, everybody.
What's up?
Hey.
Did you catch anything that we said in the beginning, Harold, as far as, you know, some of the stuff that's going on from tables to trophies to pre-planning balls accordingly? Did you catch any of that? Did you want to give any feedback on that?
I didn't, but I do want to say to all those that are listening that in the same way, if you walked into a restaurant, and the restaurant, the business, didn't provide you with the type of service that you felt was expected, would you go back? I mean, too often, it seems like it's the same people that are, excuse my expression, screwing the scene with inadequate tables or shiesty stunts and a lack of care or consideration, it seems, for the community. But the next time they put a flyer out, it's 400 or 500 people at their ball again. So, I mean, like, you know, I had an incident with United Airlines on the way to Chicago, and I won't be giving United my money again if they don't compensate me properly, you know, for what transpired. So, you know, my question to the community is, why do you empower these promoters, hosts, that are hosting these functions, you know, if they're not giving you, you know, what's expected?
Well, let's ask some of the people that are on the line, especially the younger generation. I'm going to speak to start off with TJ. TJ, have you ever been to someone's ball and you felt like you got shafted for whatever reason? And then a year later, or when that person gave a ball again, you were right back there firsthand.
Honestly, as someone's ball who I can really think of, no, because we usually, when I go on the balls, usually I go with Janie and all of us, and we usually pick the balls we go to carefully. We just not go up and run to anybody's ball. It's not going to be no, okay, somebody just throwing the ball, and they just threw something together last minute, and we go drive down there, you know, spend all this money, everything, just to go to something that we can, that we never heard nothing about.
Okay. Little James, I want to ask you the same thing. How do you feel?
Actually, yeah, I have done that. Well, when I first started walking balls, it was pretty much because I don't walk balls because I have to. I do it because I like to. I like to vogue. So when I did come out and I walked, and I seen, like, the lack of, you know, what we received back with our trophies and decorations on the tables or whatever it may be, I didn't take it as serious then. Now, me being a little more experienced with it, I think I do step back away from people like that. The promoters, I feel like, don't give me enough back in return because I'm one of the few people I know in my category that actually puts a lot out. I take time and I put a lot of money in my effects. I travel from state to state, all up and down East Coast, sometimes to Midwest. So now if I still cheated from a ball, I'll give them at least 2 tries. Sometimes you didn't have it like that, just to put everything out there for everybody to, you know, be satisfied. But if after the second time I don't feel like I was compensated for what I expected from that ball, then the third time I probably won't go.
Okay, and Dante, how do you feel?
I agree with Lil James on that too. In the beginning, I didn't pay too much attention to it because I was more so going to the balls because I was new to it. I really enjoyed doing it, and like tables and what was on them wasn't really a big like, wasn't something big that I really focused on. After a while, it became more something that I noticed more, getting more into leadership and just more tenure in my house and the same, going to them, I kind of noticed stuff like that more. And then now, especially with me, since I've thought about having a ball and then now that we're going to be having a ball, and even watching Harold when he's throwing his balls and seeing what goes into it, I've noticed, you know, these are things that I want to make sure when I throw mine that I'm looking out for and I do the right way, because I do notice that a lot of people do look at that. And as Harold said, like when you go somewhere, presentation is basically everything. And, yeah, you get the people's money for that night. But if you do plan on going, but say you do plan on throwing another function the next year or whenever, people are going to remember that first impression that you gave them. And if it's something that they didn't agree with and they didn't like, chances are, I won't say chances are because a lot of them will still come back, but you probably are going to get some of those names that would drive more of the people that you really want in their back, which is some of the pioneers and the icons and the legends that could get you more people in there as well, because they'd be pushing for their house members and their kids to come.
Okay. All right.
Jasmine, can I, I want to bring up something. A long time ago when I was in Mugler, Grams, Eric Mugler, his pet peeve for anyone attending, any Mugler's attending the ball, was respecting the host table that they provided for you. And, you know, this is just something that I think each house should, you know, start thinking about. And, you know, when I come to a ball, my house members will tell you, you know, your effects, your bags, your coats and all that stuff, that should not be on top of the table. You know, it's one thing to want people to, you know, put these elaborate decorations on the table, but if I spend all day decorating a ballroom and then by the time I come out, you know, during the grand march or whatever case, even the fact that you paid for the table, to see that, you know, all the decorations and everything is all squished up under coats and, you know, bags and, you know, everything that, you know, is on the table and everything is disarrayed, you know, it almost to a point, why are you doing something that people don't appreciate? So, you know, just collectively as a community, you know, when we come to balls, let's, you know, think about, you know, being a little bit more organized, whatever, you know, stuff that we have, you know, place your stuff under the table. You know, if you're not going to check your coat check, at least put it under the seat or fold it up on the back of the seat, fold it up and put it under the table so that the table itself is clear.
Okay. All right. Well, I think Tiny had something to say about that, and then we're going to bring on another cast member. Tiny, you're back on here.
Just to follow up what Harold was saying, and I totally agree with what he was saying, but don't you think, because I haven't been to a ball in quite some time, but don't you think even like back in the day, like with all the houses, you know, each individual house were different, but don't you think even from the mothers and the fathers and their leadership in each house, don't you guys feel like, because I can only conversate and converse on something that, you know, I'm familiar with because I haven't been to a ball in so long, but don't you, the houses back in the day, they had a great deal of respect for one another, too.
Mm-hmm. You're right about that.
Yeah, you know what, to a certain degree, Tiny, I agree with you. You know, there was a level of disrespect also still on the scene, but I think one of the problems, you know, comes with, you know, the people that, you know, become parents that really don't understand what parenting is about. They don't understand, you know, what they should be doing. They don't understand what they should be telling, you know, the kids or how they should be instructing their members. You know, they just think that, you know, what's supposed to happen is supposed to come out as mother blank blank or father blank blank, and, you know, that's supposed to be over for it. You know, they don't care about, you know, the leadership aspect of, you know, just making sure that, you know, there's the respect and the mutual bonds between the houses. So I think that, you know, when the scene kind of got watered down with, you know, 20,000 parents, then, you know, the respect kind of flew out the window also. Now, mm-hmm. Again, let me say this. There are young parents that are under leaders and that they are learning. You know, that's something different. But, you know, you can't just tell somebody, oh, you know, you're a father and, you know, this and that. And then, you know, they want to be respected but don't know how to, you know, offer respect.
And also another thing, because I was actually listening the other night, and if Kelly is actually listening, and if the promoters are asking Kelly to either be a judge at her ball, at their particular ball, if you are judging, everyone is not going to agree with the way that you're judging. So if you feel as though that someone does not deserve a 10, do not give it to them. Because for me, when I was in the House of Excellence, I went against the grain, and I've gave scores to other members of different houses. And, of course, you know, I got red from Raphael and the rest of them, in my house. And then even when I became Mother Cartier, I also went against the grain also, too, and gave my score to other house members in different houses. And I think sometimes with that judging stuff, we need to be more honest because judge on what you see. Judge what's presented in front of you. And that was something else that was on my mind that I wanted to chime in on with Kelly, but I had to go to sleep because I had to get up for work. So if Kelly, if you listen out there, and if you're listening and you're judging a ball in the near future, if you see something that you do not agree with, chop.
And that's exactly where we're about to go. We're about to talk about judging. So thank you, Tiny. I'm going to leave you right here. I'm not even going to mute you. I'm going to let you sit right here so you can just talk with us as long as you can. Before we go any further, I'm going to bring on the West Coast mother of the House of Chanel. Divine, you're on the air.
What's up? How's everyone tonight?
Divine.
Hey, how are
Divine.
You?
Divine, you
hi, Tiny. How are you?
Hi, honey bun. How are you?
I'm good. I just came from the Alliance meeting arguing with that lady.
Oh, okay.
Divine, you
she's
must be
angry
a
with
whole
me.
Bunch of You must have brought in a whole bunch of West Coast callers because as soon as you called in, the lines lit up. And the
chat
room
I'm
got
sure.
I guess
I'm
that
sure
the line meeting is over with.
They're probably waiting for my rebuttal.
Hey,
for
mother.
What she did tonight. Hi. What's going on, Ruby?
How you doing?
I got your call. I was in the Alliance meeting, so I couldn't answer. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
Well,
so
like the blunt go off, Divine.
Divine, okay. We got TJ Mizrahi on the line, Marcus, RR, Little
Oh, what's
James
up, everybody? Hey, Marcus, hi, Rodney.
Rodney's not on with us tonight. We got Janice Mizrahi, Dante Balenciaga, Harold Balenciaga, and Tiny Cartier on the line tonight.
Okay, how is everyone?
Good. What's going on?
Divine, we talked about a little bit about the balls as far as pre-planning for balls, tables, trophies, and things of that sort, but we're about to get into the topic of judges' panels. We're about to talk about the whole...
Somebody got noise in their background.
Yeah, I think that's Divine's phone.
Oh, let me tell you, I'm in a car, you know, sometimes I turn the volume up too loud. Plugging it. Can you hear me now?
Yeah, we can hear you, but it's just a little bit of the feedback. We're about to talk about judges' panels, everybody. There has been a lot of drama as far as the panels go. A lot of people have stated that the panels are is fucking up the ballroom scene, fucking up the ball, period. If it's not the legends and the icons, it's not the same girlfriend panels, if it's not, you know, certain cities all gathered in a new city, sitting next to each other and they're all voting the same, if it's people afraid to vote, they just want to sit here and they're afraid to shop, they're afraid to vote for the right person. There's so many issues when it comes to the panels. I want everyone to sit back for a second and tell me what do they feel is wrong when it comes to judging. And I'm going to start from the top to the bottom. And just give me your opinion on what do you feel is, you know, the problem with these judging panels. TJ, go first.
You got a million judges up there with different opinions and different views of what they're looking for. So when they make a decision on what the person who's throwing the ball is looking for and the promoter doesn't say it's clarified or what they want, then that's when the confusion starts to me. Because if the promoter stand up and say, no, this is exactly what I'm looking for, when the confusion starts with the judges, it wouldn't go on. Then on top of that, if you got the judges up there that you know who are just want attention, that's going to do shit to start problems, you a fool for putting them on your panel.
Okay. Marcus, what do you feel about judges?
I just feel as though the promoter should just be paying attention a little more. And if they, I mean, as a promoter, I guess you should remain neutral, yet you know when someone's trying it. And I think that there should be strategies developed to basically be able to handle a situation when it happens. If you feel as though the judges are trying it, I think instead of calling them out, sometimes it's a more tactful thing to do of just replacing the entire judges panel and starting over and just, you know, go ahead because you do want your event to finish. So I just think that we need to come up with strategies to make sure that, you know, we replace our judges in a more tactful manner because sometimes it's not what you do, it's how you do it.
All right, Little James, what do you feel about judges panel? Little James?
I'm sorry. I feel as though judges panel should be changed around a little sometimes. Like, I go to a major ball or awards ball, and I see the same judges every single time. When you get the same judges, you get the same winners. It makes it a little unfair for newcomers to have a chance to win or whatever like that. Like, I think sometimes it bases off of crowd reaction, and that's not always who the best person was. But, you know, I think if you switch the judges around just a little bit sometimes, then everything will be a little bit more fair. You have to try new things.
All right. Janice, what do you feel about judges panels?
I can go either way on the judges panel, and I'm going to speak from both two different sides. I think that sometimes there is shade and there is underlying problems, but I agree with Marcus on that. I think that if you are the type of person who is tactful and who is present in the moment of your function, then you can watch properly. Me, myself, that's what I do. And I only pick people up there that I feel like is going to give an honest opinion because I myself, when I get up there, and a lot of you all know this on the phone, I've gotten red from my house for going against the grain. Just this weekend in Chicago, one of my house members, she walked the $1,000 face category, and I didn't particularly like her package. Now, you know, I pulled her to the side, and I let her know, but it seemed like she still had an air of like, well, you were my mother, how are you going to trap me, blah, blah, this, blah, blah, that. And I just flat out told her, I didn't feel like you deserved a place up there with those other ladies for $1,000. Now, whatever the outcome was for the category, because also then I heard a lot of feedback, well, it was this, it was that, it was this, it was that. And a lot of times I think that people get upset because the judging does not go how they think that it should. And they try to point a finger and say, oh, it was a girlfriend, it was this, who all was on the panel, where they from. A lot of times, sometimes you just didn't do that well.
Okay. Well, let's go to the next one. Dante, how do you feel about judges' panel?
I agree with everything said so far. To add to that, I would say I think we need to remember that judging is subjective and that what you may think is rock solid, the next person may not think so, and it's not always shade. And, like, one of the things, like, for instance, I know one time we had someone that left our house and went to another house, and they were battling,
And when I chose over them, they said, oh, it was shade because they left this house, or they got kicked out of this house, actually. And they took it as shade because they were kicked out of this house for whatever reason. When Whitney was sitting right beside me, and Whitney voted for the other person, too. So you have somebody that's an icon for face, and they just voted for the other person. So are you saying that there was some reason that he didn't vote for you as well, or are you only taking the shade because he left the house, so you feel like that it was shade? In addition to that, I think the promoters should, somewhat, when they know they have a function coming up, start observing the people that you're looking at to put on your panel so that you can kind of get a feel of how they act on a panel ahead of time, and you know whether or not to put them on there. If you see that at every ball this person is cutting up when they're on a panel, don't put them on the panel with your ball, because 9 times out of 10, you're going to get the same results that you're seeing them displaying at everybody else's ball.
Okay. Tiny, before we ask Harold and Devine, what do you feel about judges' panels right now?
To be honest with you, I think for everyone, when you actually enter a ballroom, you should enter a ballroom with a clear mind. You should be very neutral. And I'm going to use myself as an example. If I'm judging a ball, which I've judged so many balls over the years, if a category is presented before me and I'm somewhat puzzled about the category, what I'll do is I'll ask one of the promoters exactly in detail what are they looking for, because sometimes, like, I might interpret it a certain way and I might not be 100% like understanding what the category is, what they're really looking for. So I'll go to the promoter and ask them exactly what they're looking for, and once they explain it to me in detail what they're looking for, if that person in front of me is not presenting what they're looking for, I chop and I look the other way and move on. And I don't have a problem with chopping newcomers. I don't have a problem chopping legends, icons. No one is exempt when it comes to Tiny Cartier. And that's how I am, and that's how I've always been. And, you know, that's the way it is.
Okay. Harold, really quickly, what do you feel are some of the issues as far as the judges panel goes?
Well, really quick, I think it's important that the host of the function conveys to the judges a clarity of the category so that the judges are fully abreast of what is expected, what the host is looking for. I think, you know, the host should limit the judges' time on the panel, not have them sitting up there all night, you know, getting, you know, full, and, you know, then, you know, they're wanting to go, they're frustrated, so they're taking out their frustration on the ball walkers. You know, keep vindictive people off the panel. You know, there are those people that we know that, you know, have a track record of being vindictive and nasty and using the power of the tin or chop to, you know, get back at someone. Keep them off the panel. If you're hosting a ball where, you know, it's going to have people coming from different areas, make sure that you have geographical diversity. And just, you know, JD's made a very good point. Definitely wanted to say that, as well as everybody else thus far. And another thing is, you know, again, like Dante said, judging is subjective. So if you're a ball walker, you know, keep that in mind. You know, you don't want to do as good as, you know, if you're walking Vogue Femme and you know Little James is at the top of the category, you don't want to do as well as Little James. You want to slay Little James to the point that the judges have no option but to pick you. You can't do as well, you can't do equal to a well-known person and think that you're going to, you know, get the vote over them. So.
Okay. All right. And Devine, did you have anything to say about judges' panels right now? Devine?
She's smoking the blunt.
Sorry, no, I'm not. I'm right here. I pushed the mute button because I don't want you guys to hear any noise. Well, mainly my thing with judges panel, well, my only concern would be the people that we use, you know, are they worthy of even judging people? Like we said, you know, we sometimes, we know people have vindictive manners. So you know, they might use that as a time to get up there and cause a ruckus, and, or just people that are just not, to me, some people are just not experienced enough to judge me or my children. I don't feel comfortable with certain people on the panel.
Okay. Okay.
Jasmine, can I say one more thing before we go to RR real quick?
Go ahead.
If and also too, guys, if you judging someone and you actually chop them and the person comes back up to you and asks you why are you chopping them, I think, you know, you don't have to make a big stance or what have you. You can actually, you know, tell them to bend over and whisper in their ear and tell them, you know, exactly why. You know, you could be real diplomatic in reference to why you were chopping them. And you could just tell them in a respectful manner, because at the end of the day, we all walk balls, and we all, no one wants to get chopped or what have you. And I think you could just explain to them in detail that, you know, your reasoning for chopping them without being nasty or what have you, instead of just saying, oh, child, you know, it's a chopper and keep it moving. You know, I think people have more respect for you when you explain it to them if they come back up to you, you know, in reference to asking you why did you chop them, because it's all about that respect thing.
And I think the ballroom scene lacks that so much. RR, what do you feel about judges' panels right now?
I just think that there's too many judges on the panel. I think 7 judges is enough for each half, 7 and 7. I think 9 judges on a panel, and like Harold said, those 9 judges are sitting there all night, and by the time they get full, they're frustrated, like he said, or those 9 judges are sitting up there, and they're not even paying attention to the participants, and they're talking to each other, or their services has set in and they're nodding or whatever the case may be. And at the end of the day, I don't think that everybody needs to be on the panel because your house member is walking.
Okay.
I think that that's an issue that people feel, because my house member is walking, I have to be on the panel. And if we don't have nobody from our house on the panel, we're not coming to your ball. And the promoter doesn't want to lose money, so of course the promoter is going to say yes. Well, how many people is that now? It's 12. Now we have 12 judges. Okay, but look how many people they bring in with them.
All right.
But can I ask a question with that? We say that houses should not be represented, but just the way that the sheer politics of ballroom, unfortunately, like, you know, it's very common for us to put icons on the panel. So if some houses just simply don't have any icons, why should someone come to a ball, come and compete, and let's say honestly lose by the one vote they might would have had they been at least represented on the panel? Because a lot of times that house that's not represented loses by one vote.
I don't know. You know what, you're right about that. But my whole thing is, there has to be a better solution to these judges, because it's just getting messy. And I just wish they would just go back to every now and then do a potluck. Everybody that comes in, they get a number, and when they get ready to start the ball, they'll call 7 numbers, and those 7 people will be judges. And if it happens to be 2 people from the same house, one of those people can judge, but the other one has to give up their number, and you call another number.
Or can I ask you a question?
Yes, sweetie.
Remember back in the day, like in the early 90s, when New York, when balls was pretty much based in New York City, and, you know, it was, you never saw people from Philadelphia on a panel in the early 90s. And we would come up to the Chanel balls or different balls in New York City, and there would be no representation of anyone from our entire city. But we would go to New York City and show up and show out, and that's how we got our respect.
And
at the end of the day, have to have someone from your house on a panel. Just the best thing you can do is just go and show up and show out.
And that's what I'm saying. If you want to, not to cut you off, sweetie, but if you want to show these people stop telling people who's judging, first of all. If people say, am I judging at your ball? Say, well, just show up and, you know, we're going to tell you who the judges are when the people get there. And when the people get there, you surprise them. You say, and now our guest celebrity judges or our guest judges for the evening. And you have people up there that know ballroom, but they show no favoritism to any house.
Can I respectfully say something to both of you? And let me just, like, and Tiny, you know, that is a valid point, and that is, you know, along the lines of what happened. But over the years, and, you know, you can dispute me, didn't the feeling develop with people in Philadelphia that very, oh, you know, they try us in New York, and then when the ball started happening in Philadelphia, subsequently, you know, people would come down from New York and may turn it and may lose to somebody from Philly that they shouldn't have, and then the general feeling was, well, y'all shade us in New York, so
I understand what you're saying, Harold, and I can only speak for myself. For me, when I first started walking balls, if some of you people out there in Radio Land don't know, I was walking fag out. And I don't know if RR actually remember, but it was me, Smiley Pendarvis, and a few other people, I think Striker Pose, a few of us walked fag out. And I know it's so long ago.
Tiny,
and
how could I not remember? You had on black patent leather with a white
honey,
blouse
and
a Chanel purse.
You got me on that mic, and you said, wait a minute, you walked out of your house like that with these patent leather pants on, and I said, absolutely, with my lip gloss, before lip gloss was popping. And the thing is, but that's, you know, if you know what you stand for and you know how you are, because at the end of the day, you could only represent yourself at the end of the day. And like I said, Harold, all you have to do is go to a ball in whatever city and whatever state and show up and show out. And people will congratulate you for, you know, what you're giving them.
I think, in all honesty, it's much harder now. I think it's much harder because it's so political when it comes to this. And I think that when you have, you know, promoters and they're gathering their judges and stuff, you will have a house that will be defiant enough to say, if I'm not on the judges panel, we are not going to come, or oh, we're not going to participate as hard, or we're not going to buy a table, or things of that sort. You do run into that right now with a lot of houses. They will demand that they be on that panel. And what does the promoter do at that point? Will the promoter say, okay, hey, we don't want you at the house? Because right now we also live in an era where there is boycotting. And that is something I truly do not agree with. But they will have their whole house, not just in that region, not just in that state, but they will have their whole house, every damn chapter, not attend a ball. It was not like that before either. And that will affect the ball. That will affect
the ball. And you're saying that also, but listen. There's the other part to that is that, yes, everything changes. So this is where we are now. This is the new generation of balls, okay? Now, we have a generation of ballroom judges who are on the panel consisting of icons, legends, and statements, okay? Now, you have 9 judges on this panel. Now, these all represent a house. They all represent fab houses, big houses, and their people are participating in this ball, okay? Then you wind up having an incident like the incident that happened this weekend where it just so happens to be 4 people from the same region. It's still something. It's always something that people are uncomfortable with. Even though they're from different houses.
The other problem really is that you guys haven't noticed that they're more than, even if you have seven houses judged per half, there are more than 14 major legendary houses out there now.
So how do you tell a house that's coming in full support, they purchase a table, and they're, you know, a reputable house, that they're not going to have anybody on the judges panel? And you had a major ball, you could easily sell 20 to 22 tables and have, you know, 16 to 18 houses at the ball. How do you tell these houses that, you know, they're just not going to be represented?
I don't agree with that, Marcus, because, and this is Jamie speaking, I don't agree with that because, in essence, that's like giving you an incentive to make sure that you're there. And I think that that's the part that's really crazy, especially like Tiny said, you know, when we came out to represent or we came out to do our thing, especially for us, people from the Midwest and from cities like Detroit and Chicago, we did not request that someone was on the panel. We didn't ask what was protocol of the person's ball that they were given. We went to go and participate. And a lot of times, people just from being heard of from Detroit or from the Midwest, period, you got chopped and sent on your way. So you really had to bring something different, and you really had to stand out just to get through. And the last thing on your mind was, who's on your panel? Do you have your cash?
We'll
and is everything going the way that I want it to?
That's right. Excuse me, hold on a second, Marcus. R.R. Tony,
yes.
Excuse me, R.R. Jasmine and Tiny. Okay, do you, the late 90s, okay, the Allure Ball at the Mark Ballroom, the House of Allure told the ballroom scene that they were having three judges only for their ball. Three judges, I can't remember exactly who the three were, but do you remember what happened to that ball?
I don't remember that ball at the Mark Ballroom. You said at the Mark Ballroom?
I don't remember.
Right.
Right.
You don't remember
because it was probably only about 100 people there. And this was a pride weekend. The scene boycotted. And the reality of it all,
at
this point is that, you know what? The people will look at it like this. If I were to say, and I'm just using this as an example, if I'm having the Capitol Awards on April 28th, and, you know, I say, okay, I'm only having, you know, five judges, first half five judges, second half, and these are the people that it's going to be. People are going to take offense. They're going to say, guess what, I'm not going to that ball. And you know what? There'll be another ball the next weekend, so them paying it, it's not like they're really going to be missing anything. So, you know, so theoretically, it sounds a lot easier than it is. And most people, when they get into, you know, the promote, the hosting and management of the balls, you know, they'll tell you how frustrating it is trying to juggle everything and trying to accommodate everybody. Not only because you're trying to get people there, but who wants to go in a hole behind having a ball?
Harold, can I ask you a question?
Yes.
If you are, I understand what you're saying, but if you go to a ball and none of your, either the mother, the father, or the emperor, or no one of representation of your house is actually on the panel, and okay, yes, y'all might feel some type of way, but doesn't that make y'all even more driven to go and
exactly.
show up and show out and make everybody know it?
It should. I agree.
See, that,
it
you know,
should.
That's the golden part of nobody knowing you. They get to see exactly what you give,
exactly.
what you bring, and they have
but
no
real,
choice.
But realistically,
yes.
realistically, that's not happening now. That's not going to happen. Because so many people feel that, especially when it's a grand prize, my God, let it be a grand prize of a large magnitude, so many people feel, oh, I have to be there to represent because my child is walking that grand prize. Because they feel that my child is going to need my vote. And they
okay,
cannot
but that's
care.
Only one
they,
vote.
Exactly.
I fully understand. And I will say this from a standpoint as an overall parent. It's also about managing the politics as well.
you know, I'm going to be 100% honest. You know, in RR, you know, you have ran a house, this and that, whatever, because you know what will happen. You know, after four or five balls of, you know, maybe not having, you know, representation on a panel when your members are walking, then become the whispers. Then become the whispers call from the houses that were on the panel. You know, Steve's just not seeing your house, and, you know, it's really time for you to go on. And, you know, people want to win. People don't walk balls to have fun. They can vote at home and have fun. They can walk runway at home and on YouTube and all kind of stuff and have fun.
Let me ask you this. All right, so you're judging a major ball, and one of your face kids walks against another face kid, and it's facing all white. And this is just an example. And your particular son has two pimples on the side of his face, and the other child's face is flawless, but both of them are equally as handsome. Who are you going to give your 10 to?
Honestly,
my child. I'm not gonna lie. My child. I'm gonna
see,
give
I'm
my
not.
Child.
I'm
but
not
that's
gonna
the
do
wrong
that.
Part. That's the wrong but part. Here lies the difference.
You have to go against the grain, baby. You got to go against the grain.
Again, you're saying what I should do. See, this is the problem. This is the problem that comes in with judging, where people feel that, you know, they're going to give it to, you know, people. More often than not, I sit and listen to people on the phone say, oh, no, I'm going to do this. I'll chop people in my house. And a lot of times, those people that say, yeah, they'll chop somebody in the house, that person that they chopped in their house that night, they should have got up, walked that person off the runway, and walked them straight out the ball. So that was an easy scenario. So don't say just because you'll chop a child in your house that looks like a mess that, you know, oh, in a tight battle, you know, your top child, you're going to give it to somebody over there. Because it's easy to say that. But the reality is most don't.
Harold.
But we can only speak to what we do. And, Harold, from what you just said, you part of the problem because you're stifling the real winner and the person that should really walk away with it just because of a last name.
But let me say something in defense to that. We have to understand something. And I speak from a personal experience when it comes to this. We have our heavy hitters in our house. And even if they were, they will take it so personal. So personal, they will leave the house. They will not forget about it for years. They will do so many things. And you're caught between a rock and a hard place because you don't want to lose your prized possession. And even if you overvote, you know, you give your vote to someone else, not even talking about text or chalk, but even giving the vote to someone else, what are you going to do? People feel that, well, I have to support my child no matter what, like a mother will support her son or her daughter. I have to support my child, even if he goes out there looking like a fool or the next person next to him looks better than him. I have to support him because he needs to know that I have his back regardless.
But and that's why we have the issues that we have now, Jasmine, because we're not willing to tell our kids the truth straight up from the start. Like,
let me say this. You know what? It sounds easy to sit back and dissect this from the phone. But the reality is, when it comes down to it and everybody's sitting and they're analyzing the ballroom scene, all these pieces are tied in together. This isn't dominoes. It's a chain link fence. Everything is tied in together. So, you know, you're not going to vote against your kids, no matter, you know,
Harold, can I say something to you? I'm going to use to see we can beat around the bush, and I'm going to use myself again as an example. I remember my son, Kareem, who was considered like the golden child, and I remember I was judging one of the awards balls years ago, and it was an all girls panel, and I remember the House of Allure had this really nice looking dark skinned handsome young man who walked face, and
right.
And I was going up for this gentleman, and Kareem actually saw me going up, so he came around the back way of the panel and whispered in my ear and said, "Are you gonna give your score, mother, to him over me?" And I said to him, I said, "To be honest with you," I said, "you are handsome, but this young man is gorgeous. That doesn't take anything away from you, and I would not be doing the right thing if I did not give my score to him over you. And you have to accept that." And Kareem and I, we talked about that particular issue after the ball was over, and he understood where I was coming from, and I told him, that didn't take anything away from you. That didn't make you less attractive. It's just that someone else out there is just a little bit more handsome than you. And you have to be honest, and if it was a risk that I was willing, it was a risk that I was willing to take, and I took that risk. And like I said, it's all about going against the grain. I have given my scores to other house members over my own house members. And I didn't care who liked it and who didn't like it, because when someone asked me to come and judge their ball, I'm judging their ball on what's presented in front of me. And that's how I am, and that's how I've always got down, whether you like it or not. And if it takes going against any of my house members, oh, well, move on.
So, Harold, let me do something really quickly.
Harold, I'm going to let you say what you got to say, but let me do something real quickly, because we have a younger generation on this panel, and we have a whole bunch of callers. I want you callers to call in right now if you're not afraid. But call in right now and speak to us about it. I want to know from James, little James, from Dante, and from TJ, if your house leader, your overall mother, the founder, or whatever, is on a panel and you are walking, let's say, a grand prize category, and we're not even going to go with a pen or a chop. We are going to go with the overvote. Vote for the next house member and not you. The next house and not you. How is it going to make you feel? And honestly, what would you do? And be honest about it. What are you going to do? Or what would you have done? Or what? How did it make you feel? TJ, answer the question first.
Truthfully, be honest. It wouldn't be the first time it happened, because Janice has voted over me many a times. And that's
okay.
One thing that she instills in us. Don't necessarily think just because she's on that panel, you go get her a vote. If you think you want to get her a vote every time you get up there and you get mad, kiss her ass, because she's not going to care how you feel about her. She's going to vote fairly. So I wouldn't get up there and expect to get a vote from her. Honestly, she's the main person I'm going to try to impress, because I can't ever tell what the hell this woman going to do.
Okay. So you're walking $1,000, $2,500, $5,000 grand prize. And let's say, not even Janice now, let's say Andre, let's say, you know, someone in those lines overvoted. They voted for someone else, and they just stayed too dumb.
If Andre, Jack, anybody in the house overvoted on me, I would still have the same fact, because I know, coming from home, what I deal with here, being overvoted by my mother. So I can just imagine by them, I wouldn't feel no type of way if they overvoted me. That just means someone else sprung her harder next time. Suck it up.
Well, that's why I feel Janice is doing a great job in her position over there, because a lot of mothers and fathers aren't like that with their children, to make them understand or walk away respectfully. Dante, how do you feel about it?
Well, to be perfectly honest, I would feel some type of way. I would be upset. Because, I mean, I just feel, I mean, it's if we're like basically equal and then that one person just did something a little bit more, then I think that my father or mother or the representative from the house should still, I feel like that they should give me a vote, because if that person is that much over the top more, then they should be getting the votes from the other six or more judges that's up there, that one vote from my house, it shouldn't matter that much and the other person still won it. I mean, I would feel some type of way, I'm not going to lie.
All right,
Little
James, how would you feel about it?
Honestly speaking, it depends on how this voting process went. If I've seen times where, you know, like it would be 5-1 and it takes 6 votes to win. But if I'm tied up with somebody and my house member is breaking the tie, don't pick over me. I don't care how bad I did or how good they did. On the other hand, if they have every vote and they need one other vote to win, you're the next vote. I mean, obviously, they're doing something right, and I wasn't doing something right. So, you know, it's different. So I would feel some type of way. I'd be upset. You know, criticize me about it afterwards. Let me know I could have did better, whatever it may be. But just like you're up there to represent me, their house members up there to represent them, everybody. It's not everybody's night. So.
But then the rebuttal to that, James, you have the next day people come back saying, this person shouldn't have won. Why would you let them win knowing they didn't do this
exactly.
And that?
Exactly. And I, me personally, like with my kids, like TJ said, I'm the first to ridicule them. I'm the first to get them in order because I believe that it starts with me. And all of my kids know it is no guarantees, because if I allow you a guarantee, then I'm literally taken away from the beginning of the meaning of the ballroom scene, period. It's for you to compete. And the best one that performs that night is supposed to win, not just you because you're my child.
So let me ask you this. Janice, what you're saying to me is anytime that you've walked the ball and you've lost, you've never read about it?
Harold, you know me. I don't come. Let me tell y'all. You know, but the only time I get involved in something is if it's something physical going on. If I won, I won. If I lose, I lose. I walk away gracefully because I don't feel like that it's really nothing that has got down. And Harold, you have been there plenty of times where I have literally gotten into it with my house members because I chopped or overvoted.
No. I'm not talking about you on the panel at this point, okay? What I'm saying to you is, okay, you have never felt like your reaction after losing a category, you have never reacted negatively to the judges after losing a category?
Me personally, no, and I know which time you're talking about. And if you remember, we were in Chicago, and my brother got upset because your house child kept going on and on and on about it. I never have got huffy or gotten out of place because I know that I'm always on point. So, no, I have no reason to get huffy or out of place because you know when I'm at the back of the runway, I'm not going to present no half-ass shit to you and then ask you why you didn't see it.
But you know the one thing I can say, that's somebody's doorbell or something. You know what I say? It's an old school saying, and Tiny, and you can verify this. As long as you bring the crowd to their feet and you give the crowd something to remember, if the judges don't give it to you, the crowd knows who should have won.
Thank you.
So when you give your child, when you give your child that score that they didn't deserve,
I agree with you.
When you give your child that score that they didn't deserve and they get the trophy, they may have gotten the trophy, but they really didn't get the win.
Exactly.
I couldn't agree more. And like I said,
and it'll hurt them more to hear it.
You know what?
It'll hurt them more to listen.
What I'm not going to do is sit and listen to, you know, this hypocrisy. Because it's no shade. You know, okay.
We're having an open discussion, Harold.
Well, we're two people talking, and the bottom line is, it's cute to say something from what sounds right, what everybody wants to hear.
But that's the problem in the scene. You know, people aren't realistic. Like I said before, you know, these things can't be.
Okay,
when you say
people aren't realistic,
be talking to me. So what part of what
you
agree with?
Okay.
No.
Denise,
what I'm saying, I'm talking about now at this point. I'm talking in general. I'm no longer speaking to you directly. I do apologize if you took it that way, because I'm not speaking to you.
No. I want to know what you feel like is hypocrisy, because I mean, you know, we have an oh, come on now, like it's not just come
no.
on now. Like,
okay, whoever's
you know
driving, she put the seatbelt
on. I'll clear it up for y'all. Yes, it is a little weird, because what the problem is that we're sitting on the phone, and y'all are sitting here telling people that, no, you shouldn't. And, Janice, I have seen you vote over your House members. This is not about you. This is about judges, period. Yes, and ideally, you should be picking the better person. But the truth of the matter is, we allow our members to come out for categories that they are not prepared for. We know they're not prepared for it. They probably shouldn't even make it to battle, but we still give them our 10. We do it just to do it. So the truth of the matter is, yes, in a way, some judges are hypocritical more than others, because they all say, I'm going to vote for the fair person, and that's why us as promoters have put them up there, but they're not doing an honest job. And then they justify it by saying, well, it's my opinion. The truth of the matter is, if as a promoter, if I put out a rubric or what I'm asking you to look for, you know it's not your opinion. It's your opportunity to actually judge based on what I'm telling you. Not just say, well, overall it was good. Either it was a 10 or a chop. And it's not too much in the middle. There should never be – it's not too many gray areas, especially, you know, for ballroom. Either there's a bump on their face or not. You saw the bump or you didn't see the bump. But not out of 9 of y'all, 1 of y'all saw the bomb. But
you know
see,
what?
But how,
I,
but my question
I understand
is,
what
I,
you.
This is my question. My question is, how can you scrutinize and chop for a bump on one night, but then
let it slide
a month later you'll let somebody come, a female come with razor bump all up under her chin and everything, and still get 10.
Right. All of that's a hypocrisy. All this,
but,
you know.
Can I say something again? Listen, and I'm going to use myself again as an example. Not only that I judge many balls, but I also walk them. And there have been times where, though, that I felt like I should have won. And then actually, to be honest with you, if Andre is out there listening, it was a ball here at the convention center. Kenny Polo had a ball here in Philadelphia, and I walked against Tyra Supreme. We walked labels, and I was in all Petra Cox from head to toe. Tyra was in Issey Miyake, Terry Mugler shoes, a Judith Lieber handbag, but I had just won over Tyra last week in New York in that same outfit. And the final score came down to whatever it was, like 8-8 or what have you, whatever it was. And Andre Mizrahi, someone who I have a great deal of respect for, was the deciding vote. And we both were standing there in front of him, and I was looking at him like, okay, are you serious? It doesn't take that long. And he gave his score eventually to her, and he broke the tie. And Andre can attest to what I'm saying to you guys. I stopped speaking to Andre for almost a year during the whole clubhouse days and all of that, because I felt as though that he wasn't judging fair. And Tyra knows this, I know this, and Andre knows this. I think Stewart was actually on, was the commentator. So, you know, I don't want you guys to think like, you know, we're just being diplomatic and political on this phone. Like, we all are ball walkers also, too, and fair is fair. And there have been times where, though, I know I should have won and I didn't win, but you know what I said? Okay, bitch, you got me this night. Okay, I'll see you at the next function. I'm going to come back and get you again.
Well, my philosophy, what I always say, is it's a round world, and there are going to be times that you lose was that you definitely deserve to win, but you walk away, you know, and you have lost. But on the flip side of that, there will be times that you win and you probably should have deserved to lose.
So it does eventually balance out. It's unfortunate. And like we said before, it's subjective. But, you know, again, it's no breaking everything down into okay, well, this part happens and then that part, then, you know, oh, well, no. It just don't happen like that. You just can't separate everything. It's all tied in together.
Harold, can I ask you a question?
You sure can.
You a ball walker, just like everyone is on this panel and on this phone. Realistically, of course we all would love to win all the time when we walk, but honestly, are we really that caught up on ourselves that we feel as though every time we hit a runway that we supposed to win? Like, I mean, honestly, let's be honest here. There's always going to be somebody that's actually more lovelier or actually doing more runway than you, or just more, you know, somebody's always going to up the ante on you on one particular night. You cannot win every night. That's just honest. You cannot win every night. And you have to be honest with yourself. But like I said, like you guys were saying, even if that person actually got the trophy, but the crowd actually applauded you, that was your grand prize right there. And that told you right there that you were supposed to win. And to me, like, I feel as though, once again, that should make you even be more driven to come back and get them the next time, because it's a competition. And, you know, I never got into, like, the arguing and fighting, because that's not in my DNA to do all that, because I don't do that type of stuff. But, I like to show what I show up and show out on the runway, and that's how I handle things. And I can only speak for myself. I can't speak for anyone else in my house. I can't speak for anyone on this panel right now.
Of the balls, is this tiny? Yeah. Yes. That's the premise of the balls. The premise of the balls is that we weren't valiant people. So when we had to argue and read each other, we'd be like, you know what, bitch, there's a ball in 3 months. Meet me on the runway, and we'll see who's the real bitch. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And then
well, unfortunately,
it out like
a, lot
that.
Of, a lot of people are just not feeling that way. No more.
We understand it's a new generation. It's a new generation.
We're dealing with a whole bunch of spoiled ass brats. Kelly, you're on the air.
Hi, everybody. How are y'all doing tonight?
Hi, Kelly. How are you?
I'm doing all the couture. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Hi. I was just sitting. I've been sitting here all night, and I have been listening to your conversation, and I heard what you had to say, Tiny. And so, on the flip side of that situation, okay, because I did see the flaws in those ladies, but
uh-huh.
The only reason that I didn't chop those ladies, because if I would have chopped those ladies, it would have came back to this. She only chopped them so Mother could talk a win. And so now I listened and I sat here and I heard everything that Harold has to say. So my question to Harold is, Harold, did you see the black eye that Shanice had under her makeup? Did you see the safety pins and Stasha's dress? Why didn't you chop one of them, Harold?
Well, actually, first of all, I didn't know anything about no safety pins or no dress until I heard it on the radio show. Like you said that Shanice had Shanice, of course, was walking face. She had makeup on. So I damn sure wasn't looking at her for expectations of a black eye. So the black eye is something that I just heard about for the first time, and the safety pins was something that I heard about on the radio show for the first time when it was mentioned. So therefore, when it comes down to it, you can't expect a person to judge something that they aren't, you know, aware of.
Because I was just, you know, I just wanted to know, because that was my reason for not chopping those ladies, because that's what the first thing would have said, would have came up
well,
was,
Kelly,
oh, Shelly chopped.
Well,
so
can I ask you a question?
That's my personal opinion why
Kelly.
I didn't chop them. But if I did not have a member that was contesting that category, oh, trust and believe, those ladies would have got the hammer.
But Kelly,
you got to get off of your speakerphone, Kelly, because nobody
okay.
can hear you.
Okay,
go ahead, Marcus, and we're not going to stay on that topic of
not
Monday
Kelly.
Either.
Yes, sorry. But Kelly, how do you justify your judging or your vote
because you actually voted for the person who, you know, how do you decide which flaw outweighs the other flaw? That's the better question.
I took the overall look and everything that was I didn't look at the looks anymore of the outfits and the everything. I got into the face, even though I seen it, nobody else seen it. So I got into the face.
I'm just gonna ask you this, Kelly, and then we can go get off this. So hey, what you perceive, because I didn't see the black eye, so I don't believe it was there. But what you perceived as a black eye, you'd vote for a black eye over pins and a dress, and the category was face.
I see. However you look at it, Shawnee still would have won. However you look at it, if I'd have gave the vote to
Sasha,
it would have been 4-4. However you look at it, I picked who I thought that I should have picked that night. But my thing about voting is, I'm going to, if you're in my house or if you're not in my house, however you look at it, if you're not bringing the category correct and you're in my house, I'm going to chop you. And I did it as a Mizrahi. People didn't see it and they left the house after the fact. And that was their opinion, that they didn't see it. But if you're not bringing it, I'm going to chop you. And Janice did what she had to do for that child in her house on the ball on Saturday. And if Janice didn't do it, I was going to do it anyway.
Well, again, why do we always have the same judges on the panel?
Again, I will say this, you know.
Because go ahead.
Okay. One thing I can say, and I have said this, and I will always say this, that Janice is consistent in her judging. So I will give you that. I will give you that, and I respect that, because the fact of the matter is that you are an active parent, and, you know, if you feel you have to chop a Mizrahi, you will. You know what I'm saying? If you have to vote over, you know, a Mizrahi, you will. So I can respect that, you know, as still being an active parent. At this point, you're the founder, you know, you're an icon, you know, you vote, you do, you act how you want, because, you know, really, based off of your vote, the reflection doesn't come back to the Chanels or whatever. They're still very, you know, well.
My presence is still a part of the House of Chanel, because if I do something, it's going to reflect on my kids, because someone will try to take it out on my kids if they think it was something that I was being shady about. So how can you say something like that? As long as I'm alive and breathing, I'm still in Chanel. I'm just the founder.
So then basically you do admit that, you know, that is something that comes to mind as a leader of a house, that you have to do things so that it doesn't reflect back on your family, correct?
No, because I chop my own kids. And you know that, and everybody in the ballroom says
okay,
that.
Okay, this is what we're going to do, because we're not going
to... No, let me finish this. I don't mean to yell at you. I don't mean to yell. But what I'm saying is I have a set mind when I'm judging, and I look for what I'm looking for. And when I'm judging a category, if it's an evening gown, I want them girls to bring those gowns up, and I'm looking at the stitching and everything and seeing who has the best. If it's face, I want a porcelain doll.
So what you're saying to me is, if Tempest comes out and she is stitching untold, you know, that night she sent the girls packing. She sent Raquel. She sent Sasha. She sent Ayana. Okay, and it's down to Dee Dee and Temperance, and Dee Dee has a bump on the side of her face. You, the person that looks for bumps and flaws and this and that, you're going to pick Temperance over Dee Dee? That's what
you're telling me? Chanel, you're right. I will pick Temperance over Dee Dee. And if you don't think
I
would do that, then you're a very poor judge of my character, because I have proven that I can do that, and I will do that.
I have the utmost respect for you, but I'm telling you here and now, I do not believe you.
All right. Has anybody ever seen me chop my own kids?
No, it's not about chopping your own kids. We're talking a premier member in your house.
And what has that got to do with anything? What's she going to do?
You're right. It don't have nothing
to
do with
her. She's going to be mad at me, and she's going to do just what Ava did. She's probably going to stop speaking to me. But at the end of the day, I have my integrity.
Okay.
And that's something that you don't have.
Wait a minute.
We're not.
No, Jasmine. You're not about to let. Now, integrity You want to talk about integrity? You're the last person to talk about integrity.
Now, I'm talking about when it comes to judging. When it comes to judging.
No. Don't try to shift it now. Listen, let me tell you something. Let me explain something to you.
Oh, my goodness.
You know,
Harold, I am so sorry, and you probably will be mad at me and not want to speak, but stop really quickly. This is what I'm going to do. I'm going to show you the power of technology. RR, I'm going to put you there, too. Now, what I'm going to do is allow RR and Harold to talk one-on-one, and we cannot hear you. So in a few seconds, it will just be y'all one-on-one, RR and Harold. Y'all can go about, and y'all talking about your own business right here. Talk with each other. Okay, now they're on hold, and they're talking to each other. Somebody will cue me in when they're done. We are going to take a couple of callers and ask them, what do they feel about all this drama? My question is, like I asked before, will you be mad, leave your house and all the rest of that stuff if your parent or whoever overvotes, you know, votes over you or so? 267-331, you're on the air. 267-331, you're on the air. Can you guys hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, well then I don't know where that caller is, and I hung up on them. Good night for the evening. 803-727, you're on the air. 803-727, you're on the air. Okay, Harold hung up, so I guess they're done talking. RR, are you back? RR. Oh, hold on. Are you back?
Yeah, I'm here.
Did y'all talk?
Nobody talked to me. It was blank.
I don't know why he wasn't talking.
Okay. I didn't hear anybody.
Yeah, both of y'all was on the line talking to you. Well, y'all both had an open line to talk, but. Okay, the next call, I don't know what, 803-727, you're on the air. All right. And
I want to apologize to the younger people who are on the panel tonight, you know, for hearing that. But, you know, this is just what happens when people get on the defense.
Okay. 718-304, you're on the air.
Yes, I have something to say about, can I just touch on the judges panel for 1 second?
Go ahead.
Okay. There was a ball that happened in Fort Greene Park in Brooklyn, if you guys remember. And Deja had came out, her production, as Freddy Krueger or whatever. And, you know, everybody came out for their tens and stuff like that. Now, that $1,000 was supposed to be hers. But because Ashley Icon did not want her to win another $1,000, she chopped her. Her production was on point. Everything was on point. So when Mika comes out with her production as Catwoman, it was just so tired. She didn't do anything. She didn't vote, nothing. And the commentators, I think it was Selvin who called it out and was like, you know, when Christina came out, she was like, this is what I want to see. This is what I've been waiting for or whatever. And that shows you how these judges are so unfair because she's Ashley Icon. She can do whatever she want to do. And my question is to you, is it because people are intimidated or scared of certain people? That's why they let things fly? I don't understand.
Okay, caller, thank you for bringing that up. We're going to talk about that bullying and intimidation in 1 second before I go to my last caller. 267-254, you're on the air.
Hey, everybody. This is Marquise Prodigy.
Hi, Marquise.
Hi. How are you?
Jasmine, I've been on here for almost like an hour.
Well, you didn't hit me up on Facebook and say you were on.
I know.
Uh-huh.
But to touch on your question,
If my house member was on the panel and they voted over me, I would be very, very, very upset and would feel some type of way.
Why?
Because I feel as though if I wasn't that good to get your vote, you should have just chopped me.
And how would you feel if they chopped you?
I would feel much better if they chopped me, because then I would say, okay, that means I did something wrong, and, you know, they're not going to sit here and play with me. They're going to say, you didn't bring the house supposed to. I'd rather my house chop me than somebody else, because somebody else I feel like is embarrassed. If my house shot me, I look at it like my friend reading me rather than somebody out on the street reading me. Like, if my friend reading me to my face, it's like, okay, my friend is looking out for my best interest.
But Marquise, can I ask you a question?
How do you do that? When I've done that, I've been told that maybe I shouldn't have chopped because it was more embarrassing and I should have just voted.
Well, I'm seeing my opinion. This is how I feel. That's why I gave an example. Like, if my friend would tell me, you know, Marquise, you're dirty, you're a bum, you're doing this, you need to get yourself together, I'd rather them say it than somebody on the street who I don't know.
Okay,
and
but Marquise, let me give you an example. Okay, in Philadelphia at the Crystal Ball, you had a $1,000 production, and your production was nice, but and you got a 10, and your house gives you a 10, but what if somebody brought it better than you, and your house was like, well, no shade for the $1,000, this person deserves it. You weren't a chop. But you just didn't deserve to win.
But if somebody bring it better than me, that doesn't mean I didn't bring it right.
Why would you want your house member to chop you rather than vote over you?
Because I'm saying if I brought it right, if I got 10, that means I brought it right. If my house member chopped me, that means I did something wrong. So if everyone gave me 10, I'm thinking in my head that I brought it right.
That don't mean you were the best. When you're battling, your job is to pick the best of the two or three.
But I feel as though to my family, I'm always the best.
Marquise,
yes.
you from Philadelphia?
Yes.
Okay, I don't know who you are, but what category do you walk?
I walk Schoolboy Realness.
Okay, I'm going to have to call Man tomorrow and chat with him about you. But listen, you have to realize at the end of the day, you cannot win every ball. And what the gentleman is explaining to you is it's not that you got your 10, but the person that came behind you actually was just like maybe an inch or two better, and they deserve to win the cash. And you have to just say, okay, you have to be man enough to say, okay, they won the cash, and that's going to make me come the next time at the next function and do even better. That's what he's trying to explain to you, because you cannot think that you're going to win every time. That's just in fairy tale land.
But I'm not necessarily looking to win. I'm just looking for my house member vote. Regardless if I win or lose, I feel as though if I did the standard, if I did everything as the category card and everyone across the board gave me 10s and somebody else is going to get better than me, that's the other judge's, you know, decision to pick over me. But my house member, I'm thinking, you gave me 10s, I did the standard, so you're giving it to me. Just like I don't think a mother would tell another child, I mean, tell her child that another child looks better than her.
Yes,
they
will.
Jamie
does it all the time.
Marquise, you better be
talking to
you.
She say they look better to you, and I will.
No, what I mean by a mother, I'm talking about your real birth mother, your real actual biological birth mother. I don't think she would sit in your face and say, this lady looks better than you. And that makes
you
feel
beautiful.
Well, speaking from experience, and this is Jamie's again, like seriously, when I told my mother that I wanted to go into my transition, we did have that talk. And I did listen to my mother, because she said, okay, if you're going to do this the right way.
So, Marquise, I have a question for you.
Yes.
Marquise.
Yes.
This TJ, I have a question for you. So, say if you're walking scuba for $1,000, and I'm going to use two schoolboys that I know, I want you to give me an honest answer. Say if Malcolm comes up and he get his 10s, and he brought the category better than you, and you walk up behind him, and let's say Kiana's on the panel, you would want her to chop you versus voting over you?
Well, Kiana's not my house mother, so you mean Mercedes?
Yeah, okay, that's right. Mercedes, correct.
If
okay, listen to what I'm saying. Because I think y'all actually not listening to me. What I'm saying is me thinking of tens means I did everything. I did everything for the category. Everyone saw that I did tens. The other person got tens, but he bought it better than me. That means we both met the standard, but he just did better than me. So we both met the standard. I felt as though for the other judges to vote over me, not my own house member. Because now you're telling me, if you vote over me, you're telling me that I didn't meet the standard. So I feel like if I didn't meet the standard,
that's
they should
try
me.
No.
Hold on a second. When you get a 10, Marquis, basically it means you did meet the standard. But when it comes time to overvoting, it means the other person's standards were better than yours. Are you still going to fault your house member for picking what was actually better than you?
Yes. I feel as though instead of voting over me, just chop me.
But why would they
chop
you? Again, no, I don't want this to be about Marquise not understanding or we're trying to point the finger at Marquise. But Marquise, we have to really say, you know, I don't even know how to compare it, but someone is always not going to be your knight. And you may be perfect, you may be on point, but that next person brought it an extra mile. They stuffed their foot in their ass and they brought it just a few notches better than you. You can't fault your house member, I mean your house leader, for that. Because when you hit the floor, everybody went up. You got tens across the board. You did everything perfectly. But then a few people down the line, this next person walks up there, and he gave everyone chills. The whole ballroom went in an uproar. Does that mean that you still should have been chopped? No, it's not fair that you're chopped. You followed the category. You brought it you brought it the correct way. But it's just that the next person did something out of the box. They did something completely out of the box. Are you still going to get mad that they did something out of the box and your house leader gave them a vote?
Yes.
Wow. And you know what, Marquise? I'm glad.
I think I understand where y'all coming from. I don't think y'all understanding me. Y'all got to look at it. Because I don't think the same thing that y'all thinking doesn't mean what I'm thinking is wrong. Y'all have what y'all think, and I have what I think. So it's like you can't basically. I understand you're trying to convince me, but I'm still gonna feel as though I'd rather feel like this. If everybody gets C's, then that means everybody met the standard. But if I get a D, that means I did something wrong. Even if the crowd, you know, still go up, because it might be a perfect example. Like when I was in Chicago in 2010, like Jay Herrera had won $1,000 for Schoolboy. The category read something totally different, but the whole crowd went up, everybody went up, and he got 10. It wasn't
okay,
right,
well,
but nobody chopped. So it's like, if my house member can notice see that it's a blue, and I wore all pink, but everybody gave me 10s, and he decided to chop, I can't get mad at him. But if everybody gave me 10s, and he still gave me 10s, I'm expecting him to pick me.
Well, I'm glad that you feel that way, and believe me, your answer is not wrong. That is how you feel, and that's what people need to hear, that we are in a generation where these children feel that they need the support of their house leaders, and if they don't get the support from their house leaders, they are going to feel a certain way. Tiny, they are not doing it for the same
thing. Well, that's the problem there, Jasmine. That's the problem.
Yeah. That's the problem. You know, that is the problem. Do we all agree with that? No. I don't agree with it at all. I bear witness to people. Here we go. I hate this drama, honey. I'll deal with you later. I don't agree with it. I don't agree that it should be done that way, but somebody threw me off with a text that I just got. 757-202, you're on the air.
Yeah, me personally, I will feel some type of way if I got chopped for my category by my house. And also, I mean, that's just in general. You expect the support from your house no matter what. And if they feel like you did something wrong, they should correct you after the fact. But doing it in front of the audience, I don't believe so. Like, if you bringing it, you should get the vote. There's no reason why your house member should chop you, like, or not vote for you or somebody else. That's crazy. I totally agree with him. Like, y'all, I mean, we on the phone, like, we not at a ball right now, but I guarantee if we was at a ball, all the opinions would change. Like, that's crazy. I can't agree with you
on that, because there has been so many conference calls and meetings in the house of Mizrahi about me chopping, about me overvoting, about me sending kids on, like, all the time. And I still stand within my integrity when I get on the phone with Andre and anybody else, and it's like, okay, look, well, if it's really a problem, then you're trying to stifle me as a person. And at some point, we have to get away from the group and the house and the entity that we belong to, and we have to get down to what type of people are we.
That's just like the ball that Jasmine just had in VA. When the Rebel Lions won something at the house, a lot of people thought that they shouldn't have won, but they still won. Nobody stood up. Nobody said anything. There was a lot of talk about it, but nobody stood up. Like, everybody, and then
the ball
ended.
They won that night. It's just an opinion of somebody. But when you win that night, it's an
extracurricular activity. So whatever you're thinking that night, or whatever your perception is, that's it. But don't you think
that that's part of the problem? Because how do you allow something to go on, but then you sit there and you the next day on the radio show, you want to send questions and concern in about, you got a whole list of what went wrong and a whole list of what you didn't see was fair, but you also did not use your voice in that time and space to correct the wrong.
Well, like I'm gonna overshare my single opinion. I think your house should give you support no matter what. I just believe that. That's me. That's just my opinion. I mean, like.
Okay, caller. I'm gonna put you on hold because your loud background is loud. But again, I got your point. He is another person here that feels that his house should have his back no matter what. Area code 410963. We're going to talk about this for the next 6 minutes, and then we are going to talk about commentators and their role in the ballroom scene. 410963, you're on the air.
Hey, well, I have a comment. I think that is a double-edged sword. I think people pick and choose who they're going to point out or call out of why this person won or didn't win, or this house won when they shouldn't have won. I think you have to listen to everyone who call in and voice their opinions. You have very fair judges like Janice, like Miss Tiny Cartier, and like Tony Revlon. Those are three fair judges who you know are going not they're going to give you their vote. I mean, they're going to judge fairly, period. You need to, I think, at the ballroom team, to clean off these panels of people who have been unfair time after time after time. It's time to change the panel, period.
Oh, thank you, sweetheart.
Thank you.
I feel left out for some reason. I don't know why.
Oh, I'm too sorry.
I'm here, sweetie. I'm just playing with you guys.
I apologize. Listen, I totally put you. I've seen you way back then. I totally apologize for leaving you out. But sometimes when, you know, I'm talking, I get caught up.
No, it's okay.
Okay, and I think we have one more caller that's calling back up. 718-304, you're on the air.
No, I asked one because I'm waiting for you to talk about commutators.
Okay, well, I'm going to talk about them in 1 second. Let me clarify something really quickly for the people who listen to this on the archive and for the people that are on the line. It took a lot for me to get people to come on this phone, like Dante, Little James, Marquis, even Tiny, to be a part of the show this late. I have told, you know, said this time and time again, that I do not want this show to be centered around a whole bunch of arguing, bickering, and going back and forth. Save that for another night, but this is what I'm trying to do on Wednesdays. If you feel that I mute you, disconnect, which I didn't do, or you feel like you got disconnected or so, please do not take it personal or get upset with me about that. But if I do see you getting out of line, I will move you to the side in order for you to calm down, because I have guests on here that did not even want to be a part of the show because of the history of this show, and I have to accommodate them. I don't want all that arguing, drama, going back and forth, no matter what was said, how it was said, or if it was said in the wrong way. You don't have to defend yourself. And I don't want people on here saying the things the wrong way either. I'm asking you guys to please respect that and respect me, because I'm doing this show for you guys. And again, Dante, Little James, Marquise, Tiny, people that are not a part of this show every night, who don't want to be bothered with all the drama, I say again, thank you for being a part of the show and sticking with us. Because, again, I don't want all that drama. But let's talk about the commentators. Commentators, I hear the stories over and over again, and we hear it all the time. I hear it all the time. The commentators are fucking up the balls. They're fucking up the ballroom scene. When are the commentators going to change? When are we going to have more different type of commentators? The commentators give more life to their girlfriends and their house members than they give life to other individuals, and that persuades the vote. The commentators try to control the ball. The commentators take control of the ball, and the promoter doesn't take control. The commentators, pretty much, it's all about the commentators. What do you guys feel about that, and what should be done? Because if that is how the people are feeling, I don't want to participate no more, Jasmine, because the commentator did this, they said that. I don't want to even walk because the commentator is going to do this. They're going to do that. The commentator picks and chooses the battles and sets up the battles so the next person can win, or their favorite or their house member can win. The commentators do it a certain way so the promoter doesn't have to or will give out the money to who they want it to be done, and they get a cut. I have heard every story about commentators. What is your feel about commentators, and what should be done or what can be done about it? One more thing I hear about. The commentators want to be treated like queens and kings when they travel. You got to pay for their airline tickets, put them in hotel rooms, VIP this, VIP that. But when they get to the ball, they're only on stage for 10 or 15 minutes, and then they're all over the ball. Do you feel the commentators, you're paying them too much to do your ball? Do you feel like you have to do all this stuff for it? I mean, the list goes on and on and on. We probably should have one show dedicated to commentators and not 30 minutes. But go ahead, TJ, first.
Ooh, you said a whole bunch. Commentators, when I hire commentators to do my ball, they're my MC for the night. They're basically the voice you're going to hear the whole night. True, as sometimes the commentators do try to take over too much and do things they're not supposed to, but then that goes back to the promoter. If you let them go that far and do what they do, then, hey, you did it to yourself. If they open the category up and do whatever they want to with the category, and you as the promoter allow them to do it, you can't say nothing then, because you're the asshole who sit there and let them do it. If they're not doing their job, or late getting there, or rambling on the mic and not commentating, then as a promoter, you should step up and say, hey, this is how this is going to go. As far as them picking battles and things like that, I don't see a problem, because it's like any ball, they just pick two people to go at it. So I don't see a problem with that. As far as the price goes for them,
I do think the price is a little too much, but at the end of the day, you have to pay for something. So you have to suck it. True enough, the commentators do want you to pay for their airfare. They do want you to pay for their hotel room. Now, as far as being VIP to this and all that other stuff, I never experienced that.
Okay. Marcus, what is your feel about it?
I guess I have to agree with TJ when it comes down to the commentators are only going to do as much as you allow them to do. But how do I say this tactfully? I mean, honestly, it's your responsibility to make sure that you put a little more emphasis on what their job is. I personally believe in contracts. You know, you're not doing this, you know, you're not taking pictures, you're not taking breaks, you're not doing all of this. You know, this is a job. You want to get paid. You're going to get paid. This is when you'll take your break. You'll let me know when you're leaving. I can't leave my job without letting my boss know. And for that night, whether they believe it or not, you're their boss. Now, I've been labeled as, you know, Officer Marcus or whatever, but I'm not going to give my money to anybody that I don't have any control over, that they won't listen to me. If you're going to be defiant, you'll commentate somewhere else. At least do it the way I want it done, because at the end of the night, I'm the only one that's going to have to take the read for it. In regards to the pricing of the commentators, I mean, I personally like the best of the best. So whatever I identify as the best, that's what I'm willing to pay for. If that's what their fee is, that's what it is. The only thing I don't agree with, and I'm going to say, and I hope they're listening, if you give me a price, I don't care if it's 1,000 people there, that's your price. You don't bonus based on the crowd, because that didn't happen. And to try to charge me extra when you came 2 hours late because I had to pay 2 hours overtime, that's foolish. And never again would that happen with me. You know, I hope y'all don't get upset at that. You know, I'm not saying anyone's name, but a lot of times you are the reasons why we have to pay for extra time. And you probably should be penalized and docked for the extra money that you just caused me. But, that's all I got to say on that for now.
Okay. Janice, I want to ask you how you feel about that.
Well, I think that I think it should be if you do have an opinion that goes against what they ask for, I think that you have to get it fully understood and fully disclosed from the beginning. You know, as long as I've known Jack and Selvin, and we've all been, you know, created a sisterhood and stuff like that, like, I don't, you know, their price is their price. And I can choose, as a promoter and as a person that's hiring them, I choose on whether or not I want to pay the price before my function. So a lot of times I don't understand the back and forth about it, because I've been knowing these people. I mean, we go way back. I've never had a problem with paying them what they ask for, because I believe in what they bring to the mic, and that's what you do. Just like in my field of makeup, it's a lot of makeup artists, but these people specifically come to me because they like what I bring to it. And I think once we get the commentators here, and a lot of people get heavy and they don't get the crowds that they want, I think that's when a lot of times it comes up where, like, oh, I think she's asking for too much. But if this is always this person's price, why is that too much? Because you don't want to pay it, or because now you're not getting the crowd that you think you should? So I think everything should be disclosed up front. That way there is no misunderstanding or no complications or anything like that.
Okay. Dante, what do you feel about commentators?
I agree with basically everything that everyone else has said. I mean, I think that, you know, they will tend to go off on a tangent at times, and I do think that, you know, they can sort of control your ball if you let them. I think it is important as a promoter, as a host, to make sure that you are, if you do see that things are starting to go off track, that you, you know,
go up there and you make sure you get them back on track and say, hey, look, we need to keep this moving along. We don't really have time for your personal views and your personal feelings on such and such issues. You know, this is what I hired you to do. And, I mean, you don't have to tell them like that. But, you know, just go up and say, like, hey, okay, this is where we're at. Let's stay focused. Let's get back on topic with this. Let's keep this moving. As far as prices, I didn't realize how much commentators can cost until recently when we were starting looking into doing our ball. And I kind of have mixed.
They negotiate, Dante. Believe me, they negotiate.
Oh yeah. Oh, I know. I've found that out too. I see it two ways. I see it one way that, you know, people are saying, you know, you're paying them, their job is to come there and commentate the thing. But at the same time, depending on the commentator that you're going with, they're also promoting your ball at every ball that they're at. So in a way, you're paying them for promotion of your function as well, because they will put your ball out there and make sure that they're mentioning it as well. As far as flights and all of that, I think that that is a bit much, and I think that if a commentator wants you to book their flight and even their room and stuff, then I think it should be one set fee, and then if you agree to that fee, they get that money, and they need to handle what all they need to do within that. When you book an entertainer, a lot of times they just have a flat fee, and I mean, they may tell you, you know, this is what's included: flight, travel, you know, rum, et cetera, but it's all into one fee. I think that maybe if they put it in that way, it might work better. At the same time, it might not. I think that it's kind of crazy, especially when, you know, a lot of times there's a mini ball the next day and you're flying this person in, and then they're staying, this is something Marcus has mentioned, you know, and then they're staying to commentate that mini ball the next day. And ooh, so you just flew somebody in for somebody else's thing. And so, I mean, I think the travel arrangements, especially if they're requesting to be flown in, when if there's someone that normally will take a bus somewhere and they're asking you to fly them in, it's kind of crazy.
Okay. Little James, what kind of experience have you had with commentators? Because I know you haven't, like, had the opportunity as of yet to throw a major ball or anything like that, but what type of run-ins have you had with commentators?
Well, I personally haven't had any run-ins with commentators, but I think everybody made valid points. I do think that commentators do begin to get a little over their head with a mic in their hand. They need to go to a ball and do what they're paid to do, and that's commentate. And I believe, and with commentating a ball, you're supposed to entertain as well. But to entertain, you don't have to, you know, embarrass people or call anybody out to make anybody look like, you know, just to make anybody, belittle anybody, period. I do think that something that Marcus does, which is write up a contract, I think that that's something that everybody should do, because once a contract is signed, you know, that's what you have to abide by. And, again, like Marcus said, if you can't just up and leave a ball. I mean, leave your job without telling your boss. So if you sign a contract, that promoter is your boss for the night. You have to listen to what that person says. It's not what you say. It's just how you say it. And I think that commentators should respect everybody just as well as people should respect commentators. So a contract right there, that sets a line of respect between both individuals.
Okay. Marquise, real quickly, what did you feel about that?
With the whole commentating thing, I really don't know much about that. But during the ball, I feel as though the commentators need to do whatever his job is. And if he continues to do whatever he's doing, that means the ball promoter must be okay with it, because he's allowing it to happen in his ball. So
okay.
I really don't pay attention to the commentators.
Divine, did you have any feedback you wanted to give about commentators or anything?
That's a very testy subject. I mean, it depends on when you're talking about which commentators, and I would think, because all commentators don't do the same thing.
Yeah, they do.
So, I mean, that's going to be a little hard. I mean, we want to be specific, and
I think we're being general, Divine. I mean, I hope no one's pinpointing, you know, individual commentators.
How can you address the issue if you're generally speaking? And that's the
because I think sometimes
these people know what they're doing. I just want to be honest.
But,
like, you don't really have to say a name.
But
who are these people? I mean, I'm lost.
Thank you. That's what this state of emergency
you said,
is for. We're calling
to
action.
I mean, we're talking about, well, I'll be honest with you. In my experience, every commentator that I've personally dealt with, you know, I've had some form of issue with. Now, has it been that extreme?
No, but every commentator, and I've pretty much had all of them, you know, all the major ones. You know, it's, I don't want to pinpoint anybody or say their name or talk about the experience, because especially business matters, but we've all experienced commentators somehow kind of taking over your ball. We've all experienced commentators who have kept LSS longer than what you thought it should be. But at the end of the day, all of those things, everything about a ball falls back on the promoter. You can't blame
exactly.
the judges. You can't blame the commentator. You have to blame the promoter. You know, if I had people say, well, I didn't finish the ball because this, and this person, LSS was 2 hours. Well, you allowed them to LSS be 2 hours. You should have went up there and took them to say, this is the judges panel. Let's get started. You allow it to happen. But, I mean, I hope they're not. The things that I said, I spoke in general because it goes to a number of commentators. It just didn't go to one person. If it went to one person, I'd have said their name. It goes to a lot of them. The majority
all
of
right,
them, actually.
All right, what is your feel about commentators?
I just feel if commentators can get paid, then judges should get paid because basically they both doing the same thing, running your ball.
Oh, well, judges,
I know I'm
fighting
RR.
Well, Lord.
So, do you guys feel that judges and commentators are running the balls nowadays?
No.
You do have your instances. Sometimes you do because you have like friends of friends that may have a side input or something. You know, it's easy. It's very easy to get distracted in the moment, and it's very easy to lose control. But that's when it determines what type of person you are.
Let me make it right there when you said that. Let me say this because you said this earlier. This is an example. If you got a $500 category and they didn't bring it like your category, and then the judges say, well, why don't you just open it up, child? Just open it up. Child, it's not your ball.
That's not control, though. That's
influence. I swear, though, RR, that same happened to me this year. My grand prize was $1,000 open to all performers. The young lady who usually heals the floor, and there was another person that was very good. Neither one of them did too well, so my panel is sitting there struggling because they're wanting to know what to do. I specifically, and TJ can tell you, grabbed the microphone. I said, look, y'all know me. Y'all know the integrity of my name, my reputation, and my balls. If you don't think that this girl gave you an exciting interest, then you sent her on her way. We're not going to sit up here and give it to our friend, our daughter, our niece. If you don't feel like this $1,000 in my hand right here, and she didn't give you anything exciting. Exciting means you hear noise, you hear clapping, you hear going up. If it was dead silent when she came out, thank you, good night.
And then you don't just open up the category to give out half the money.
No, I did not open it out. I put that
$1,000. But this
is
what I'm saying. I'm saying a lot of times judges will say, oh, open up the category. Or if the person who's given the function is at the door taking care of some business, they'll interpret the flyer with the commentator, and then they'll come up with their own little interpretation, and then they'll say, okay, this is how we're going to do this.
Mm-hmm.
But see, the problem with that is now, but let's just be realistic about it. You have a ball, and you have four or 500 people there, and all these people have paid $30. And let's just say no money is given out. Now, that true enough, if they didn't bring it the way you wanted them to, at the end of the day, people come to balls now to somehow supplement their income, to win. For some people, it is their income. When they're looking at it, a lot of people are paying their bills off of walking balls
having balls and working balls. A lot of people are on ballroom payroll. Don't know how they do it.
I agree to that, yeah.
So the problem is now, politically, you have a ball with 400 or 500 people and you give out no money. Is it going to hurt you to even, because I, to be honest with you, I wouldn't want to be labeled as the person that tried to set it up. Because it's not really, I don't believe Janice asked those people to, it was well-deserved chops. But at the end of the day, was it worth, and today is $1,000 at the beginning of the day worth next year getting ready to say, well, she don't pay out her money. Well, she didn't pay out her money last year because nobody deserved to win the money. But people forget that part. Just
and then that's
going
where
the
competitiveness comes back, where you say, if I'm not on point, I may not win this money. So I'm going to make sure I'm on point this year because she don't play
yeah,
when it comes to giving out her money.
With there being a ball every week now,
but
you don't have that.
Can
choice.
I ask
people
a question?
But the thing is, I'm sorry to interrupt you, sweetie. The thing is that the very next 2 weeks later, the same thing happened in Ohio and the money wasn't given out. And we both got red. We both got red, but nobody brought it correctly.
Can I ask a question?
Go ahead, honey, and then we're going to take two callers that are on hold.
Is it more harmful, because I'm listening to you guys talking about the commentators and grand prize and et cetera. Is it more harmful to you to say, for instance, and I'm going to use three people as an example. Three people come up there and walk grand prize, and the panel chop everybody. So is it more harmful to you to just give the money to somebody instead of just saying, okay, well, nobody deserved to get the money and they all got chopped, so we just got to say, okay, no. I think we all are being honest, especially, you know, as judges, if nobody got the money, the promoter shouldn't be vilified for the judges not giving the money out.
The problem is they are being ridiculed. So at the end of the day, it's the
$500 or
$1,000. Well, but it's happening. So at the end of, now, mind you, I've never had anyone not win my grand prize. I've never been that lucky. But I've always said that if it did happen, I would probably take the money and put it on the mini grand and just make that mini grand a larger category, because I never want to be labeled as the person who didn't want to get the money. That's the one reason I'm not going to take.
I think that's what the sad part, because you're still in the business of trying to appease somebody. If you didn't bring it, it doesn't get handed out next category.
Yeah, but that's still. But this is the thing. That's the one read that's one read I don't want to have to want to be labeled as. You know, when people label you as a person who set up, you know, sets up events, it's really hard to get rid of that. It's easy. If it's just $1,000.
Let me ask this question, because this is about the commentators. Is it right for a commentator to make a judge get up from a panel?
That's not right.
Absolutely not.
No.
It's not your
ball.
That's
how it is to come to the promoter and tell the promoter.
Alrighty,
but then again, the commentators should have to tell the promoter, because the promoter should have their ass sitting up front watching their own ball in the panel.
Well, how many people that's on this phone right now have seen commentators tell judges, get up?
I've seen people do. I've seen commentators do that. All I want the commentators to do is address the commentate. Call the categories accordingly, and make me laugh. And you know, I don't get into because I'm not a promoter or anything. So I don't get into the logistics of, you know, with kings and queens and all that. Laughing at that.
I'm sorry, sweetie. I'm sorry. The other.
Let me take these two callers, because we only have 8 minutes, and I don't want them to wait there for no reason. 410-963, you're on the air. 410-963, you're on the air.
Just listening.
Okay, thank you. And 718-304, you're on the air.
Yes. About the commentators, it sounds like you guys are taking some kind of power, authority from the commentators, because I absolutely agree that the commentators should have a right to remove a judge if the judge is being unfair. I absolutely agree with that. There is no because the commentator is supposed to be your eyes, the promoter's eyes, if there's something going on that's wrong.
No, you're your eyes.
I don't believe that they're the eyes. I do believe that they serve a very good and important function. But when it comes down to decisions of money, categories, grand prize, or the protocol of the flow of your ball, the proprietor is in charge, period.
I agree. Listen, guys, we only have 6 minutes into the show, and I guess we are going to have to do another one of these when it comes to the balls, because we didn't touch up on